take a ride? From the high desert and the great American Southwest, exclusively on Sirius XM Radio, this is Dark Matter with your host, Art Bell. Now, here's Art.
Actually, spooky
matter. This night, ladies and gentlemen, spooky matter. You have sent me ghost stories. My board op in D.C., that's where he is, by the way, Washington, D.C., Evan is, may call you. And if so, we will we'll definitely talk to you about your ghost story, and we got some good ones, too. And we will scatter that in with open line ghost stories. Now, not yet with the open lines, but we will get to that, I guarantee. It's a long night. 4 hours is a lot of show with as few breaks as we ever have. All right, you know what? We've got a winner. That's right. In the ghost photo contest, we've got a winner. And I think that I've got her on the line right now. Her name is Rebecca O'Donnell, and she found out about 2 minutes ago or 3 minutes ago that she was the winner of our ghost photo contest for Babushka. So, Rebecca, welcome to Spooky Matter.
Thank you, Art. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Congratulations. You know, you got a brand new radio, and you got a one-year subscription to Sirius XM.
I am so very excited.
Yeah, it's a good deal. How did you come upon the show?
I actually had heard many rumors about the great Art Bell, and one of my friends is an XM subscriber, Sirius subscriber, and I just happened to be over, and I got to listen to a couple of your programs, and I loved it.
Uh-huh. Well, we depend on that kind of thing for sure. Anyway, tell me about Babushka, would you please?
Okay, I worked at, I actually worked with a fellow at a cable company, local here, and he knew that I did some amateur ghost hunting, and we would talk about that, and he was kind of shy to show me, but he actually showed me this photograph that I entered in the contest, and said that that was at his sister's house, and that they had been experiencing creepy stuff that had been going on in the home. And when I saw that picture, I had never seen anything like that before. I had gotten orbs myself, but nothing
sure.
ever like that.
Oh, I see orbs too. Yeah, but orbs are not what you brought us. And by the way, yours was picked as a winner by the most positive comments. There were like 100, I think, positives on you for that, and it was clear winner. There was one other, but it got qualified because somebody had poached it from another website.
Oh, okay.
So, yours is an original, and it's totally a winner, and, you know, whoever took it, who took that?
That was my coworker's name is David.
Okay, well, boy, he did a good job. I mean, to be able to catch something like that with a camera.
Oh, it spooked him. It spooked him very much so. And he didn't even really know what he had captured until he had seen it in his phone, you know, like really saw it. So it was before all those applications.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, before all the iPhone applications and all the little things that you can do trickery with, it was before that even really evolved yet. So that was what made it even neater, you know.
Do you actually know the date or rough date?
Yeah, it was taken around 2007.
Okay, 2007. All right.
Yeah.
All right, well, listen, Rebecca, bless your heart for entering. Bless your heart for having a really good ghost photograph, and enjoy the radio and the one-year free subscription, and we'll expect you to call back.
Thank you so much, Art. Such a pleasure to talk to you.
Take care. All right, that is Rebecca O'Donnell, the winner of the radio and the one-year free subscription. Told you somebody was going to win. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Spooky Matter. Now, what tonight is going to be, as I mentioned, is a combination of those who have sent in ghost stories as requested. And we are in the process now of calling you. Now, we will augment that, if need be, with open line ghost stories. However, I want to serve up a warning to you. I want to be scared. If I'm not scared by your story, it's probably not a really good one. It's got to put a little chill, raise the hair, you know, maybe on the back of my neck and put a little chill down my spine. And I scare fairly easily. So they've got to be good ghost stories. You know, if we take potluck, they've got to be good ghost stories. And I'm also going to make a special request tonight that if you're an over-the-road trucker, I know there's at least four or five of you out there, that if you want to tell your ghost story, you pull over safely into a rest area or the side of the road somewhere where you're safe, so you can tell your ghost story with a good cell connection and with reasonable quiet in the cab, as it were. So, that said, I think we ought to get underway. All right, Spooky Matter underway for Halloween night. I'm Art Bell. You've got to love that laugh. I can do it, sort of. How's that? Spooky Matter on Halloween night. And I know many little ones are out there tromping through the night. By the way, including mine. In fact, one of the photographs on the front of artbell.com tonight is of my little one, Asia Rainbell, ready for candy collection. As you can see, very ready for candy collection. She lives in fear that when she gets home, Daddy will claim all her candy. In past years, I have played around with her like that. And so now I believe that when she gets home, which she will before I do, of course, she will hide it. Who knows where? We'll probably find it next year. All right, let's go to Tennessee. And Osage, I guess the name is, right? Is the name Osage? Hello, Tennessee. Hello, Osage. Are you there, my friend? Well, let me try it again. Osage, are you there, buddy?
Yes, Art. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I thought we had lost you for a moment, but no, we have you. All right, so what's spooky in Tennessee?
Nothing. The story I have is actually whenever I was overseas in the military. First, I just want to say I'm a little nervous, so I apologize.
Oh, relax. So, in other words, it's like an alien ghost story.
okay, yeah. I also want to give a shout-out to Bell Gab, to all those guys out there.
The Bell Gab people? Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
What do I call them? Vicious but vaguely lovable? That's really an apt description.
Yeah. Well, the story had to do whenever I was in the military. It was the 2002, 2003. I was stationed overseas in Korea. I was at a Camp Stanley base, which is kind of far north. And,
right.
And I
may
was
I ask, let me stop you. What is it like? You know, I've been to Korea any number of times, but being actually in the military and stationed in Korea, well, put it this way, I've heard of our troops in Korea referred to in interesting ways, as though you're kind of there so that if the North starts a war, America's automatically brought into it. Is that how you guys looked at it there?
Kind of. I mean, well, you know, a lot of people don't know, I guess, that we were never actually, we signed a ceasefire. We never signed a peace treaty, so we were technically still at war.
That's correct.
And they stationed me there because I after the 9/11 happened, I wanted a combat. I thought I was going to go to Iraq, but instead they sent me to Korea instead. So
well,
I got
you darn near got some combat anyway. It got pretty tense there for a while.
Yeah, it did. We had riots and stuff outside our base, and they had an accident. It's kind of a long story what happened, but
all right, I'll let you get to it. Don't worry. Every year, a whole bunch of South Koreans get together in like almost a mob, and they march on the gate. You know, north. And you know, I always thought, what is that about? These guys are down in South Korea, where you know where they have freedoms and a relative good life. The economy's in great shape, and Korea is just booming, and yet they march on the North Gate. I always thought, you know, what they should have done one year is just open the damn gate, let them march on north, and close it.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of stuff that goes on that the public doesn't hear about. The reason why they were rioting on our base was because we had an accident where two girls were actually ran over by one of our tracked vehicles. And I'm sure you can look about it on the internet, but they were pretty bad. They were actually throwing the Molotov cocktail bombs over the fences, and we had some buildings catch on fire. But yeah.
All right. Anyway, I don't want to stop you from your story. Proceed, please.
Okay. Well, during the end of my time, I was usually when everybody does their last 3 months, they try to keep them on light duty so that they don't get injured, because if they get injured, it causes complications. So they put me on the unit police, which anybody who's been on a base over there knows what a UP is. It's kind of like NP, only you're just your security guard, I guess you could say.
Yeah, in the Air Force, we call them APs, but yeah.
Yeah. So basically, I would be in charge of the gates, and they would rotate us around the different gates. And I always liked the night shift because I'm just kind of a night person, you know? And so they picked me to work on this gate, which I actually worked there whenever I was during I was doing my time up in the upper part. It's called we call it the AHA, which is the ammo holding area.
Right.
And up there they have, that's where the last line of defense, I guess you could say, for artillery. The North Koreans had their artillery focused on us, and the only thing we could do is store ammo inside the mountain and in a big tunnel. So to get to that tunnel, you had to go through the gate, and that was the gate that I was, stationed at, in charge of.
Mm-hmm.
So during the night shift, first I want to say that place had a reputation already. The people there, the Koreans, I've heard them talking before. And I remember one time early on when I first came there, I asked them what they were talking about. And the Korean guy told me, you know, kind of laughed it off. He said, well, they were talking about how that place is haunted. And this was during the daytime. I really didn't understand, you know, what it was about. But I found out later that during a safety briefing we had, that there was a soldier that was killed there in the area, and it was pretty gruesome. He died when he was airing up a tire, and a split ring came off and killed him.
Ooh, no.
Yeah, and it was probably instant death, but it was in the area that I worked, in the area,
right.
You know. So, anyways, I would work there at night shift, and things were pretty calm. Nothing really happened. It was me and another person at all times. And we really didn't have anything happen. I mean, we had cameras there, and it was really quiet. And one night when we were up there, one of the vehicles, and these are Hemets, these are pretty big vehicles, it just started on its own. And first we heard the rumble, and we didn't know what it was. So we got up, we went outside the door, and I could hear it running. And we looked at each other, and that's when it really kind of got spooky, because I worked those machines, and I know that we don't have those malfunction and just cut on their own.
Right. That's bad to start the story off. A vehicle starting by itself is not good at all.
Yeah. Well, it kind of spooked both of us out, and I decided to go because I knew those vehicles to begin with, so he stayed in the guard shack that we had, and I went over there to the vehicle. And first of all, I was really creeped out because it was in the dark area. So I had to kind of walk in the dark, and I looked around the vehicle, and I didn't see anything at all.
Mm.
So I opened the cab up, and I cut the vehicle off, and then went about, you know, went on our way, and we just noted it in the log. So that was the first time something had happened. And we had similar incidences with other people where the lights had cut on. You know, people had noted in the logs about, like, similar incidents like us. Now, I don't know if they took it serious or not, because I don't think anybody, maybe nobody read the logs, you know. Because, I mean, that place clearly had something going on. But later on, I guess it was maybe like a week or so, or maybe 2 weeks later, the horn on one of the hemets, and I mean almost, I think it was the same one, it might not have been, but it was in the same area, started just going off on its own. And this is like maybe like 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, in the middle of the night, and we're both in there, and it just, it goes off, and we're just like nearly jump out of our seats and fall down, because it was just, it scared the crap out of both of us, you know.
By this time, you know, I'd be worried that thing would start up and head toward me.
Yeah. You know, I was actually so scared, I made the other guard get out and go with me, which we're not supposed to do, because someone's supposed to be at the gate.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, I actually had to go up there and undo the chain, and it was just really weird. I don't understand how that could happen. I mean, I don't know. If you think about ghosts, if ghosts are real, you know, how can they influence real things? I don't know, but I do know that a guy did die there. And
I guess your story kind of says they can.
Yeah. Well, it's just too weird. Yeah.
I really appreciate your story. Thank you very much. Yeah, you know, a vehicle does not start itself. A vehicle does not suddenly start, especially if it's the same one, begin blowing its own horn, so to speak. So, there you have it, a story all the way from Korea. And when you think about it, hauntings certainly would not be exclusive to any one area. They would be all over the world. And guess what? They are. Ghost stories are as famous in Japan and Germany and every other country in the world as they are here. In other words, ghosts are universal. Let's go to right here in Nevada, and John. John, welcome to Spooky Matter. Hello, John.
Yeah, good morning, Art. Mega Roswells.
Not morning yet, not even on the East Coast, but...
yeah, not
hey
really.
There.
Great to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, too.
Yeah,
and so you've got a story for us, I take it.
Yes, I bought a house out in Elbridge, Iowa, and I only lived in it 14 months. I worked for Caterpillar, and they closed the plant, so I moved out of Iowa and moved out west here. And we were moving in, and I had just put a 9-drawer dresser into the one bedroom that was going to be my daughter's bedroom. And me and my son, he's 15, carried it in there and put it in. And I went out to the kitchen to grab a cup of coffee, and I come back to the room, and I couldn't open the door. And the dresser had slid in front of the door. At first, I thought my son was in the dresser.
The dresser slid in front of it. Now, was somebody in the room or no?
No, no one was in the room.
A 9-drawer dresser, that's big,
right. Yeah.
Moved itself in front of the door.
Yeah. And I thought my son was in the room doing something, you know. And
sure, of course, yes.
And I turn around, and I'm hollering through the door. I said, open this up. I want to get this other stuff in there. And then he comes in out from the front door with another box of stuff, you know, and I'm going, well, who's in here? So anyway, I had to pry the door open and slide that dresser out of the way to get back into a room that was empty.
Well, that's just plain impossible.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought. And, I mean, me and my wife sat down, had a cup of coffee, and, like, you know, you just bought the house. What do you do?
I know. I'll tell you, I think what I would have done, did you buy from an individual or a realtor or what?
No, I was a realtor. But
a realtor.
I knew the guy that had lived there before, and he had never said anything about the house. I mean, I had worked with him at CAP.
Yeah, no reports of ghosts, right?
No. And it was a very strange thing. And my dog would never go in that room. We sat there and decided, well, this is pretty strange. So she said, well, it's not going to be my daughter's bedroom. She says, that's going to be your poker room then. And so,
Is that what
I moved
was?
My dresser and the daughter into the other room. So all I put in there was my poker table and stereo, you know.
But, how did you do at poker after that?
Not real well in that room.
That's just, I love the story because it's possible.
Yeah, you know, and you sit there and you look at yourself, and, you know, I was looking at my wife and going, did this really just happen? I mean, did I have to pry this door open to get in here? You know, and it's like, you know,
it's impossible. Yeah, it's impossible.
Happened any other way.
No, it couldn't have. I really appreciate your story, and that's two stories in a row.
Well, I wanted to mention one other thing. I had moved back to Iowa. My dad had Alzheimer's and stuff, and I was driving down the street, and I saw they had an open house at that house. And I was telling my girlfriend, I said, you know, I used to own this place, and
right.
I said, let's go in and take a look, you know. And
yes.
I'm talking to the realtor. I did want to check. There was a little cheap little under-the-counter kitchen light that I'd put in when I bought the place, and it was still there. But I talked to the realtor, and she said that house had sold 7 times since I had it.
And 7
so times? Nobody ever stayed very long in it. I don't know if anybody else had trouble or not. But
did you tell the realtor about
yeah.
what you just told me?
Oh, yeah, man. She says, I don't want to hear anymore. She says, I got to be here all afternoon.
I completely understand. And you know what? Despite the laws that say, now anyway, that you have to tell somebody if a house is haunted, if it was sold, bought and sold 7 times.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody ever mentioned it.
Yeah,
this was, let's see, I bought it in, I think it was 82, and then I left in 83 when they closed the plant. And I moved back there in 2005, so it had sold 7 or 8 times between then, so I don't know.
Right.
Very strange story.
All right, thank you very much, my friend. Listen, second one in a row of, how can I put this, things being moved without human interaction. Or things being moved by a spirit. A vehicle started, a horn that goes, probably on the same vehicle, and now the real impossibility. I'm not sure I'd move into a house like that if something like that happened. I mean, after all, if anybody had moved that 9-drawer dresser up to the door and blocked it, they would then have to still be in that room unless they went sailing through a window. And he said his son was still outside. So that means something that we don't understand moved that thing. And I guess the message would be, not this room. And obviously Mom understood that message because she did not allow the daughter in there. Jason in Louisiana, hi there, and thank you for coming on the air.
Hello, Art. Mega Roswell.
Thank you. You have
honor.
A ghost story for us, I take it?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
This is a story about when my wife and I were newlyweds, and as newlyweds kind of do around that time, they'll go visit their parents, you know, once a week or so. And my wife said she was going to go visit her mother. I said, that's fine. I'm going to go ahead and just stay home. I'm in my pajamas. And about 40 minutes later, she came back, and she said, you're not going to believe what happened to me on the ride home. And being the foolish young husband, I said, that sounds great, honey, but let me go ahead and just finish up this video game that I'm playing right now. And so that frustrated her.
You're already like a husband. Kind of you're already like a husband of about 10 years. Not a newlywed. A newlywed jumps up.
I was in hot water.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So she was a little frustrated, and it wasn't until the next day that I was able to get her to tell me what happened. Apparently, on the ride home, she had just left her mom's home, and she got the feeling that you get when you're being watched. And she looked off to her left, and she saw the classic shadow figure staring at her. And
excuse me. This was when she was driving?
Yes, sir.
And this shadow person or whatever was moving by itself and keeping pace?
No, it was standing behind a sapling, which she thought she saw a tree out of the corner of her eye. And when she looked, there was a sapling, and the shadow figure was behind it, standing behind it. And as she drove past, its head followed her. She got the chills, and she picked up, you know, she sped up a little bit down the neighborhood. And as she made her way to the end of the neighborhood, the lights, starting where the creature was, started going out one at a time until it reached her. And once the lights reached her, she stopped. And that classic fight or flight kicked in, and she got mad. She was angry. She was scared, but she was angry. So she threw it in reverse, and she rushed back to the point where the creature was, and nothing was there. It was just a sapling, and she had a cold sweat, and she was just sitting there, and the car was idling, and all the lights turned on at once. And
well, you sir have a wife with cojones. Let me tell you,
she's
would not
woman
have.
I know.
Yeah, that's right. I would not have gone back. There's no way I would have gone back. So
she must be a tough one. The first time, she is a tough cookie. I'm not afraid to go out in public. She's got my back.
All right, my friend. Thank you for the story. No, thank you. I guess insert myself into the stories as I hear them, and it's kind of like, what would I do? It would be bad enough. You see the shadow being behind the tree. You see the head pop up, and the head follows you, and then the lights start going out. Would I go back? No. I'm being honest with you. No. I would not go back. So, big cojones. Down to Texas, and Chris. Hey, Chris.
Roswell's Mr. Bell.
Thank you, sir.
I'm glad to finally get in to talk to you. Since the first time I heard you, you're talking to Mel Waters.
Mel's Hole.
Yes, I've been a fan ever since.
The story goes that Mel sold his hole to the... Selling his hole. Mm. He sold his hole to the government and moved to Australia, where he's living, presumably, happily ever after, but I'd sure love to talk to Mel. Anyway, proceed.
Yes, sir. 25 years ago, I was a brand new Border Patrol agent. We had more trainees than journeymen, so they would stick two trainees together and say, go do your job. And usual shift, there might be four people working. So we had two guys upriver, myself and my partner downriver. Very little experience between the two of us.
What would you, I hate this, but I have to know some things.
Yes, sir.
As a Border Patrol agent, you said with very little training. So it's like they send you to the, when you say river, the Rio Grande?
Yes, sir.
Down to the Rio Grande and they say, watch?
It was very little experience, not training. I may have misspoke there.
Okay.
We had just gotten from the academy, but neither of us had a half a year in yet.
Okay.
So they send us down. They tell us to go fight crime midnights. So we're driving down the river looking for anything that we could see that didn't look right, not really knowing what we were doing, but trying to get on to job experience. We see a bonfire out on this hill that we used to refer to as the party house. At the time, it was out of town quite a ways, but now it's almost in town. And we drove towards it thinking, well, maybe somebody's down there, maybe some aliens, maybe some smuggling.
Right.
And at the time, we had switches that we could throw that would turn all the lights off in the vehicle. So if you hit the brakes or the backup light, nothing would come on. It wouldn't show where the vehicle was.
Sure.
So we turn out all the lights. We're driving down this long dirt road towards the river. And as we come around a corner, there's about 15 or 20 people standing in a huge circle around a giant bonfire. They're all wearing brown full-length robes. They got their hands up in the air like they're doing some kind of religious ceremony.
Ritual.
Yes. I saw a movie called Race with the Devil with Peter Fonda and Warren Oates several years before this,
right.
And that movie came to mind. I looked at these people just in time to see two of them turn towards us and start running at us in a not in an aggressive manner, but like we didn't have any business in their little ritual.
Hold on. I'm sure you didn't. Mm-hmm. It was on, this is on the U.S. side of the border, of course, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, oh, okay. About 2 o'clock and, in the morning.
Gotcha. And two of them start running toward you. Uh-huh. And you were, I'm sure, two armed.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay.
But they were armed in race with the devil, too.
Oh.
Well.
So what do you guys, you two armed guys, do?
I looked at my partner. He looked at me. I threw it in reverse, and I hit the gas.
My
I said, I don't see any immigration violation happening here. I went backwards with no lights. I made a 90-degree turn, and I didn't slow down until I hit the highway.
I'm with you all the way.
Once we get to the highway,
yes.
We're trying to decide what to do because our nearest backup is a good 20, 30 minutes away.
Right.
There's one sheriff deputy, and he's way the heck out of town.
Right.
So who would you report this to? They didn't cover this at the academy.
No.
So,
local law enforcement? I don't know.
Well, we're out of town. We were in the county. Mm-hmm. And like I said, there was one deputy working, and he was way the heck out of town. And we discussed it the rest of the night. Who should we report this to? And we could not come to a conclusion. So
nor were they necessarily breaking the law, really.
None that I could see.
Similar to God's law.
Well, we decided that we just weren't going to tell anybody. And we're going to try and pretend like it never happened.
I don't blame you at all.
We've managed to keep our mouths shut for about a good 20 years. Well, finally, about 3 or 4 years ago, I was invited to tell my story on the other show. And unfortunately, the night that they called the house for me to talk, uh-huh. I had a schedule change and I had to work that night.
So you never got to tell the story?
Not to them, but it really upset me because I've listened to that show, like I said, ever since Mel's Hole.
Uh-huh.
So a couple of weeks go by and I'm teaching a class. And I mentioned to the class that I'd almost made it on the radio. And I told them this story about what had happened to me and my partner and how it would have been neat to tell people I'd managed to tell my story to the entire United States and parts of the planet. And one of the students said, hey, you know, about a couple of years ago, I was driving around down by the river and I came across the exact same situation.
Oh?
Yeah, so apparently whoever these people are, they're still out there. They're still doing their little ritual, and I have no idea who they are or what they're doing.
And this person, this student, what did he do?
Exact same thing.
As you did, and as I would have done as well. I really, really appreciate your telling this story on real radio.
It was an exciting night.
Thank you, my friend, and take care. Glad you came by tonight for Spooky Matter. I just love stories like this. What do you suppose that was? Probably not ghosts. But also, on the other hand, probably not a group of people that you would want to upset, armed or not. Fascinating. Ben in California. Hi, Ben.
Hey, is this me?
It is you, Ben.
Hey, Roswell.
Thank you.
I've actually called in and told you my ghost stories before, but I've got one more story I haven't told you.
You've told me ghost stories before?
I called in on open lines tonight, and I was the guy that had been physically assaulted by a ghost.
Okay.
But I've got one story that I don't know if it's ghost or not, but it definitely qualifies as spooky.
All right.
I'm living in eastern Kentucky growing up on this haunted hill.
Mm-hmm.
And besides the neighborhood there is a dirt road. It's a gas road. There's gas wells out there. And this is where we rode our dirt bikes and four-wheelers and everything like that.
Right.
So Nobody ever walks out there, but I didn't have any gas for my dirt bike one day, so I decided to take a walk out there. I'm about 15 years old. I think I'm a freshman in high school. And I'm walking back. I've got my machete on my side. I'm looking for snakes and whatnot, looking for deer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking around, and then suddenly there's two men in front of me. And this is a straight stretch of, I would say, 200-300 yards. And suddenly, they're about 20 feet in front of me. So I tell them, well, you scared the you-know-what out of me. And one of the men says, well, I'm sorry. And they walk up to me. And they ask me questions like, how did you get out here? And I told them, well, I just live half a mile from here. And they say, they're just very confused. They say, how did you get past the gate?
Mm-hmm.
And I told them, there is no gate. There used to be a gate there, but it had been ripped out a couple of years ago.
Right.
And keep in mind, this is the only entrance for miles. This road runs for miles and miles, and a few miles the other way, there's another entrance, and it doesn't have a gate either. So anyway, that's a really weird question. And the direction they were coming from the direction of my house, and there's only one way in, one way out. And I'm thinking they should know there's not a gate there. So anyway, the whole time I'm talking to them, I'm really creeped out. I'm really freaked out. They're staring directly at my eyes, and they're not looking anywhere else. I'm motioning to my house. I say I'm out here with my machete. I'm looking for snakes. They don't look at my machete. They're both just still fixed on my eyes.
They're not even concerned with your machete? I mean, when somebody says, I'm out here with my machete, that gets somebody's attention, you would think. You'd get down. Ooh, big knife.
Yeah, you would think so, and be slightly interested. But only one of the men's talking to me, but both of them are looking directly in my eyes.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I'm freaked out. So where do I got to go? Because I never really see anybody out there unless they're riding a motorcycle or a dirt bike or a four-wheeler. But I start walking back towards my house. We cross paths. And, of course, I'm scared, nervous. And within a few feet, I take a few steps and I turn around. They're not there.
as in disappeared.
As in they are gone.
Well, maybe they vanished back into a time when there was a gate.
Yeah, that gate hadn't been there in a couple of years, and I don't really know what that was about, but I start walking fast. I'm really nervous now. My heart's racing. I'm panting, and I'm walking fast, and I turn back. They're still not there. There's nowhere for them to hide, but they're not there. So I'm convinced that something bad's about to happen. So I'm running back to my house, and I reach the road again, and there's not a work truck there. There's nothing there. So I make it home. I run to the house. I slam the doors, lock the doors, tell my mom somebody's coming to kill me. Two men are trying to kill me, and sat there freaked out for the rest of the day. So I didn't tell that story because I didn't know if it's a ghost story or not, but. It is.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm not sure what to call that story, but these odd things do happen. Yeah, and I understand. Sometimes you don't say it was a ghost. I kind of like my guess, actually. They asked about a gate that hadn't been there in a long, long time in a very weird way. And I'm guessing they went back to whatever it was, time-wise, when that gate was there. I could be wrong. It's just a guess. You're listening to Spooky Matter on Halloween. I'm Art Bell. Don't forget a picture of my little Halloween girl, Asia Rain Bell, on the website, artbell.com. That's me. I used to be able to scare Asia to death with that. It is Spooky Matter. It's Halloween. The little ones are about collecting candy in some time zones, and others are probably well done by now. Let's go to, these are your stories, Illinois, and Larry. Hi, Larry.
Hello, Art. Roswell's.
Thank you.
And I hope Asia comes back with a whole sack full of goodies for Daddy.
Oh, she will, and she'll hide them before I get home.
That's when you get into your daddy experiences, and surely you know where at least half the hiding spots are.
Well, usually she knows I grab the candy and run around the house with her chasing me. That's how it usually works out.
Yeah, that's Daddy's job.
Anyway, you have a story for us.
Yes, sir, I do. Picture it. You're a corrections officer.
Uh-huh.
Working a midnight shift. And at the beginning of each shift, doesn't make any difference which one of the three, you send your officers out to do an external a perimeter check of the sensors on the fence and make sure everything's where it's supposed to be and working.
I don't need any names, but I mean, is this a pretty good sized prison or a jail or what are we talking about?
This is a state institution.
Okay, big one, yes, sir.
Pretty all good right. size. We was generally we run around with about a population of about 2350.
Oh, big one. Okay.
Yeah, pretty good size. And I was a zone sergeant, and my officers automatically went out and done their duties. We done an external perimeter check and an internal perimeter check.
Sure.
And the internal perimeter check not only included the inside fence, but also making sure that the doors and windows and everything was secured on the buildings.
Right.
And part of the institution was handed over from the Department of Mental Health. And this one particular building, which was right across a service road from another old mental health building that had inmates in it, but the building in question did not. It was not inhabited. And down on the basement level, there was a, well, it's still there, an extremely heavy steel fire door. And there for about at least twice a week, for about 6 weeks, we would find this door open.
The fire door?
A fire door. And
did an alarm go off? I would think it would be careful.
There's no alarms. This building was built about 1910.
Okay, gotcha.
And my officer that was doing the inspection reported to me that he found this door open, and these are all deadbolts.
Oh.
And so we find doors open, not real frequent, but, from time to time, somebody would leave the building, on the evening shift. They had a class or something in there and failed to secure their door. But this building nothing was going on in there.
Right.
And the problem is that to secure this door, no personnel whatsoever inside our perimeter has a key to that door. You have to go to the communications room where we were issued our keys and our radios and get this one specific key, which took the authorization of the shift commander. And you had to
wait. And again, this door is normally always deadbolted.
Yes.
Okay.
We had keys to all the other doors in that building except that one particular door.
Right.
Nobody inside the perimeter had that key. Well, I had to get authorization from the captain to get the key in writing, and naturally he wanted to know why. Well, to keep the sergeant that I relieved, keep him out of trouble, I just told the captain that I wanted to do a security check.
Mm-hmm.
So, fine. So, got it. We went in. Me and four of my officers, we went in, done an inspection, and the place was empty, and we secured the door. And I reported back to the captain, no results, everything's fine.
Right.
And then the next day when I come in, I talked to the sergeant that was in charge on the evening shift, told him what I found, and he said, did you put it in writing? I said, no, I don't think there's any need for that. You know, ain't no sense of getting a whole bunch of other people involved in this.
Right.
And so he said, okay, appreciate it. He said, I was on the evening shift. They done two inspections, and one of them was right around 10 o'clock at night. While everybody else was performing a count, you know, they'd go around and do their same inspections as when they come on
yes.
shift.
Right.
Well, this went on for about 6 weeks, and we kept...
Wait a minute. You're saying this door was open every night?
At least twice a week.
At least twice a week. Oh, my. Okay.
And you know, I'd still have to go up there and to the comm room, call the captain, get authorization. Well, by this, after about 3 or 4 weeks, you know, he's starting to get really curious as to why I keep wanting to go in there.
Sure.
Especially, you know, with that particular key, because I got keys to every other door in that building, and it was a pretty good-sized building.
Right.
So after about 6 weeks, it was getting pretty old, and me and my four officers, we went in, done our inspection. Well, this time the captain called an emergency count. And this is about 3 o'clock in the morning. And while they're counting, we're going in there and looking around. Didn't find anything. Secured the door. And as we were leaving, you know, we're going down a little service road in between these two buildings. And not a whole lot of light back in that area. A few security lights on the buildings. But the main lights was from the perimeter, right, lights around the fence. And I happened to turn around and looked up on the second floor window at the end of the wing. And I seen a little girl about 8 to 10 years old, blonde hair. And I just told my other officers, hey, come here. So I said, look up there. What do you see? And all their jaws went slack, and their eyes got about as big as silver dollars. And I said, what did you see? I said, do you see a little girl? They all went, uh-huh. And about that time, she raised up her right hand and waved at us. And never seen her again. Never had any more problems with that door. Needless to say, that did yes. not go on our reports.
No, I wonder what her connection to that door was. Maybe
there was an old mental health building. Because part of our institution, especially on, we had two sides. And the side that I was on, we had about a half a dozen of these old mental health buildings. You know, like I said, built around 1910, 1908.
No, maybe she had a dad or a mom that had been in that building.
Well, there was children there, too.
Children, too?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, because a few of my officers worked in there for mental health when it was still in operation. And,
all right, well, you know, all right. Well, you've given us, thank you very much, another story of, in my opinion, something that's been, something physical that has been manipulated by something else. All the stories that we've had so far virtually have involved things physical moved by things not physical. 6 weeks of a deadbolt opening? Well, I guess we'll just have to all wonder what's up with that. Strange. New York. Back to New York and Franklin. Hello.
Hey, Art. How are you?
Just fine. Thank
Happy
you.
Halloween. This story takes place when my fiance Gina and I were living in Boston. We lived there in this building for about 2 or 3 years while I was in grad school. And about a month before we were leaving to move back to Brooklyn, we had the apartment packed up and everything, and we're asleep. I'm laying in bed, and I feel someone above me just looking at me. And I'm like, in my head, I'm saying to myself, all right, if you're there, you might not want to be there when I open my eyes. And I'm just kind of joking, you know. I'm not thinking anything of it. As soon as I say this to myself, I feel a gust of wind shoot to my left. And now I open my eyes and I sit up immediately. And I'm like, what is this? I look over, and there is a man in our doorway, colonial dressed, long, stringy hair, bifocals, like a tall, thin Benjamin Franklin, okay?
Right.
Now, the man is illuminated. The only light that we have in our apartment is the bathroom door behind him that's slightly ajar. He is producing his own light, but his light doesn't reflect onto my door, my floor, my wall. Nothing. All right. And he's slightly translucent because I can kind of see the bathroom light through him. Now, this man is looking at us with curiosity. No malice, no nothing. I'm just staring at him with curiosity. I touch my girlfriend and she wakes up and she looks at the door and she says, who's the man in white at the door? At that point, I really get freaked out because it was like confirmation. I turn to her. She goes back to sleep. I turn to him, and he's gone.
Oof.
Yeah. I wake her up. She tells me exactly what she saw. It was exactly what I saw. She goes back to sleep. I could not go back to sleep for the rest of the night.
I hear you, buddy. Thank you so very much for that story. Now, isn't that interesting? In other words, it may well be that many times the apparition, or ghost, if you will, is every bit as surprised at being in another place or time than it was used to. So it is as absolutely curious, perhaps even terrified, as you are. And I wonder what that says about the other side. The mixing of that side and this side on some occasions. It may well be that they have absolutely no more of an idea than you do. Think about it. Let's go to Minnesota and Allison. Hi, Allison.
Well, good evening, Art, and happy Halloween.
Thank you.
Well, I have a story that actually does involve things being moved without me moving them, but the story that I believe you are most intrigued in is my story of the time I saw a shadow person. And this story goes back about 15 years. I was 9, 10 years old at the time, and I was downstairs. We lived in my grandma's house at the time, and we lived in her basement. And this particular night, my mom had left to go grocery shopping, but my bedroom was in the basement right next to the stairwell. So the only way to get in and out of the basement is on these very, very creaky stairs. If anyone were to come downstairs, including our very fat cat, I would know about it. So I'm reading my book for school that night, and I'm sitting on my bed, and the setup of this basement was very odd. It was my room had two doors, one that went to the stairwell, and then another one that went into a very oblong bathroom that was connected on the other side of this bathroom to our living room. And right by the doorway to the living room, there is a desk. And my mom had a light on that, and she left it on for me so that I wouldn't get scared while she was gone, even though my grandma's upstairs watching TV. So I'm reading this book, and the way I'm sitting on my bed, I can see through the bathroom and then into the living room. And I can see the light is pretty much framed by the little slit of the door that I can see through. And I don't know what compelled me to look up, but I look up over my book into the living room. And as I do so, a 6.5 to 7 foot tall pitch black shadow. I could see, the only definition it had was I could see shoulders, I could see a head, and I could see that it was wearing a bowler hat, of all things. And it didn't bob up and down, as people do when they walk. It glided behind this desk from the living room into my mom's room and was gone. And I promptly threw my book across the room, opened the door to the stairwell, and ran upstairs and told my grandma. And she, of course, didn't believe me. Oh, that's silly. But this house, only my mom and I had just handfuls of experiences in this house. So she believed me when I got home. But the part that scared me the most about that shadow person is that it had to have walked a foot or two behind this lamp that was very bright. And it did not cast a shadow on the back wall behind it. It did not have any light reflect off it. It was like a cutout of reality. There was just
yes.
blackness.
And then this entity, you were seeing it full on, straight on with your vision, right?
Yes.
Not peripheral vision, straight on.
Absolutely straight on. I watched it go by and sat there and realized what I'd seen for a second before I turned tail and ran. There was really no malice to anything that happened in that house. It actually, in a weird way, helped me out one time, but it's still such an abnormal thing to see. I just couldn't deal with it, and I ran away.
Oh, I would have too. My kind of gal. All right. Well, listen, thank you for the story. It's a good one.
You're very welcome.
Take care. Thank you. My kind of gal. I mean, I'm being honest with you. If I saw a creature like that, I don't know about you. Perhaps all the rest of you are considering along with me. But if I saw a creature like that, so-called shadow person, straight on, and then it floated across the floor, I would be so, so gone. Let's go to Andrew all the way down in Melbourne, Australia. Hello, Andy.
Hi, Art. How are you?
Quite well. And I presume you have a ghost story for us.
I do. It's the story involves my daughter's imaginary friend.
Okay.
For a number of years, my daughter had an imaginary friend that she described as a tall, old man that she named Roger.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those textbook imaginary friends where she would talk with him, play with him, have tea parties with him, and, you know, sometimes even blame him for things. And, you know, my wife and I would fully see her have conversations with, like, an unseen person. And, you know, my wife did a research and she just chalked it up to an overactive imagination. For my daughter at the time was an only child. And we basically thought that, you know, the behavior was perfectly normal and age appropriate.
You know what, though? It's still creepy. If you watch a child talking to somebody that's not there and even apparently getting answers, it's pretty creepy.
It's very creepy. And, like, you know, so my wife thought it was normal, but me having graduated from the Art Bell School of Ghost to Ghost and other paranormal shows, I always suspected that she may have been talking to a ghost. Having said that, we never had any paranormal activity in the house. We never saw apparitions or disembodied voices or red eyes in the closet. None of that. One thing happened that did freak me out is one day my daughter told me that Roger didn't like me. And that sort of made the hair on the back of my neck sort of stand up. And I said to her, you know, why doesn't Roger like me? I'm a very likable guy.
And
she said, Roger doesn't like it when you throw cigarettes in his garden.
Ooh.
And my daughter did not know that I smoked cigarettes when she was born. I sort of I cut down. I would only smoke when I was at work or late at night when she was in bed. But I would go outside. I'd light up, have my cigarette, and then throw the butt in the garden. And I guess Roger wasn't very fond of my habits.
Oh, Andy, that's so creepy.
It is.
All right. Thank you very, very much. That is a creepy story. It really is. Can you imagine? Being told not to do something by your daughter who could not possibly have known that you were doing it. Oh, boy, that's creepy. All right, it's about that time. We'll pause here. Now, wait a minute, I already did that, didn't I? Let's do this. There you go. Let's pause. It's Spooky Matter on Halloween night. It's solidly dark here now on the West Coast, as it should be. Good evening, everybody. This is Spooky Matter on Halloween night. It is dark out there, isn't it? Have you looked behind you the last few minutes? Yeah, if I were you, I would. Let's go down to Sam in Texas on Skype. Hey, Sam.
Hey, good evening, Art.
Good evening.
Okay, I have a ghost story for you. I recently moved out to my family farm in East Texas, and as part of that, I joined the volunteer fire department out here.
Mm-hmm.
And that amounted to me showing up at a meeting on Thursday, getting voted in. They sent me home with a radio and pager. Well, on Saturday night, 2 days later, the pager goes off, and I'm the first one to the station. The chief and I take a truck out to this accident. It's a rollover. The car's has died, but the radio's playing, and I walk up, look in. There's a guy kind of crumpled up in the passenger seat of the car because it's laying on its side. He's dead, yeah. And, you know, we were there for an hour. We had to wait for the police to come out, do their investigation, and the coroner and so forth. We cut the roof off of the truck, and he fell out, and a couple beer cans came out, so he was drinking. There were people behind him. He wasn't going that fast, just kind of swerved, went off the road, and smacked into a tree, and it cost him his life.
Right.
But, you know, while I was there, I could kind of sense that he was around. He was still there, and, like, I could feel him, and I remember feeling sorry for him. Like, this guy, you know, didn't know that his life was coming to an end, at least this one anyway.
That's right. But you sensed he was right there.
I would look over across the road a little ways back from the accident, and, like, I didn't see him, I didn't hear anything, but I could feel that. I think this guy's standing there just looking at everything going on in bewilderment, and I felt like all of the other officers probably looked down on this guy because he was drinking and caused his fatal accident.
Mm-hmm.
So we wrap up there, go back to the fire station, put the truck up. I drive my car back to the farm, which usually has other family members on it, but they were all in Dallas for a family event. And I get back to my house, and I can, like, feel this guy with me still. I think he followed me home from the accident.
Maybe he sensed that you identified with him in a positive way. You felt sorry.
I think he could maybe hear my thoughts or feel my emotions or somehow was perceptive to that.
Sure.
But it creeped me out. I mean, I was just scared half to death because, you know, this guy is here following me home, and I don't know how to help him. And eventually I said that out loud. I'm like, I don't know how to help you. I'm sorry. And this went on for about 30 minutes, and I remember thinking, boy, I wish my mom was here or somebody else was here on the farm. Mom. And I thought about them all being in Dallas.
Right.
And eventually it went away, and about 30 minutes after that, I get a phone call from my mom. And she said her aunt heard the phone ringing, brought the phone into her, and she called me back. This was like at 1 a.m. And she said, hey, you just called. I was calling you back. And I'm like, what do you mean? I didn't make any phone call. What's the number from? Well, the number she gave me was my cell phone. And I had just moved out here, and my cell phone gets no bars. It says no service on it. So I couldn't have even placed a call. And the landline from the house doesn't have long distance, and her number is Dallas number, so there's no way I could have called her.
Oh, my
goodness.
And so
I think this guy or one of the guardian angels that took him away or whatever sort of placed this call to put me at ease.
That's a cool story. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, yes, of course it is. Thank you so very much. Wow. See, these things, they do happen. That one from Texas, and I so appreciate it. I think that the dead, it is my firm belief that the recently dead do not depart right away. They're still there for a while. Not a long time, perhaps days, perhaps hours, perhaps days. But I firmly believe that they do stick around for a while. Let's move to, let's see. Let's move to Colorado and Francisco. Hello there.
Hi, how you doing, Art?
Very well, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll go ahead and start off my story. It starts off, met a good friend in a Lutheran high school. Better way to put it, it's kind of a uptight religious school.
Right.
They would teach us, you know, Bible verses. We'd go to Bible classes. None of that to me. I mean, I was already, you know, born and raised in the church. However, this friend that I met, he really was there for other reasons. And I tried to talk to him about religion from time to time and kind of blew it off. He was like, well, why don't you come with me over to my house? He's like, this is what my mom and I kind of do on our separate time. So we go over there, and it has a real nice house, a lot of ornate, old collectible type of items. And one of the items that she has in this big open garden room area is a Ouija board. So convinces me, which going against everything that my mom had told me, don't you mess with that stuff because something could attach to you. It could follow you back if it wants to. Just leave it alone. Well, being a teenager, I was like, let me try it. So we gave it a shot, and got some interesting responses. And I was like, okay, I've got to try it. That's that. So fast forward now, we're in our late 20s. I'm in school, and I had just left college to move back in with my mom to help her with my grandmother. She was suffering dementia at the time, and my friend calls us up. It's about maybe 3:30 in the morning, December, so it's cold, snowing, and I could just hear on the other room, he's just crying hysterically, and I get up, confused in the days, asking, what's going on, and she says, he needs our help, we need to go to his house now, grab your things, let's go, and he lived, a few miles away. Mm-hmm. We get to his house, and he's standing outside in the snow with no shoes on, with just an undershirt and a pair of jeans, and immediately gets in the car, starts crying again. I mean, just shaking uncontrollably, probably from being cold and being scared. And as he starts to calm down, we ask him, what's going on? What happened in there? And he said, I came home hanging out with some friends. He's like, and I smelled this awful smell, almost like sulfur. He's like, I paid no mind to it. I looked around the house. He's like, it's not until I came to my living room that I seen a man sitting on my couch. The man was very, I guess in his terms, he said the man was very good looking, very well kept. My friend had a dog, a big Rottweiler, and his Rottweiler, instead of barking, going crazy, wanting to attack this guy, sat right next to the man. The man kind of just was stroking the dog. He said when he looked at his eyes, that his eyes were gray. There was no pupil. There was no white. That they were just completely grayed over. And I don't know if it was some type of there was no verbal communication, he said, but the look, and maybe not in his words, but maybe some type of the thoughts. He felt his thoughts were being read by this being. He said he just felt like his soul was being taken from him, and that this being knew that I have you right where I want you. When we had got to the house, like I said, he had already, in order for him to have gotten out of the house, I should have explained a little bit better, he had to break the window out of his bedroom. My mom and I are like, do you have a key to get back in? The sun's starting to come up, 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. And we're all like, we really don't want to go in there, but let's go in there. So we finally make our way to his house. And the house is a wreck. Cupboards are basically torn off hinges. Food and dish plates are scattered all over the kitchen floor. There was even dog vomit in the living room, in multiple areas of the house.
Sounds awful, yeah.
It was, like I said, I was born and raised in the church, and you know, nowadays too many people, they want to recognize the good and not the, also that there is evil out there. This certainly opened my eyes to it, because seeing what I saw and sensed what I sensed, and just the atmosphere was heavy, that as walking in that house and just knowing that, you know, why would my friend go to extremes to break a window in order to get out of his own home?
Because he was terrified.
Yeah, he truly was.
Absolutely terrified. Did he say anything about how everything got broken?
No, he said once he felt that, as I was explaining, he felt like just a part of him or a part of his soul was just being taken by this entity. And he still, to this day, says it was the devil. But he says once he started feeling that awful feeling, he rushed to the front door. The door knob wouldn't budge. It wouldn't open, nothing. So that's why he decided to break out his bedroom window. It was everyone who I told this story after that, you know, or familiar with my friend, were shaken. I mean, and just terrified to think, like, you know, that is something else. So we had that same day, we called some priests over to come and bless the house. And even the priests were, they had a look to them that maybe there really was something here that we can't explain. And during the prayer, my friend, the one who went through all this, he straight fainted on the floor. So I don't know if it was a possession and he was making that up, let's just say, but whatever happened, something happened.
Well, thank you very much. I don't think anybody makes up breaking out a window of your own house. Not for a second. The rest of it, I don't know, as he said. But if you thought that you were sitting across from death, and that death had come for you, you might do the same thing. Zach, somewhere or another on Skype. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi. Where are you?
Halloween.
I'm sorry, Zach. Where are you?
Oh, I'm in Oakville, Canada.
Canada. Okay. Very good.
So I've got a story that happened last year. My uncle was staying with us here in my house, and we were talking one night, and he was telling me about all these horrible dreams he was having.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned it the next day, my friend who likes to dabble in the occult, and he suggested to me that we do a banishing ritual, whereby he would summon the negative energies and then banish them from my uncle's life and also anyone that was in my house.
Right.
So I mentioned this to my uncle after I talked to him, and he was down for it. So the next day, my friend comes over, and what he did is he set up four candles in the north, east, west, and south corners of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And he went outside. We've got a walkout basement, so he was under my deck doing whatever he had to do for the ritual. Meanwhile, my uncle and I are sitting in a living room. And we were just told by my friend to just sit there in silence and just sort of, I guess, ponder life.
Right.
And not that long after it began, I got paranoid because I couldn't see all the candles. So I was concerned, you know, one of them might catch fire or something. So I walked around the house periodically to check in on them. And I did a round and everything was fine. And I come back to the room and the candle that was in the south side of the house where we were sitting started making this pinging sound.
What?
It just kept going ping, 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 and it would stop. And my uncle and I look at each other, and we say, "Did you hear that?" My uncle says, "Oh, yeah, I heard that." And a couple minutes later, it goes ping, ping, ping again. And I said, "Oh, boy, what's going on?" So I go check on the other candles. Everything was fine. I get back, and also within our range of vision is the candle to the east, and the fire jumped from the wick to the case that the candle was sitting in.
Wow!
So I said, "Oh God!" I mean, yeah. I started. I said, "I don't care about this ritual. I got to, you know, blow this out." So I managed to blow up the fire around the rim of the candle case and
right.
kept the wick going. And again, I think, oh, what's going on now? Is it are the rest of them? So I go and I check the candle on the west side of the house, and just as I get in, the fire jumps out of the candle and onto the dryer where it was resting.
Oh my God!
And I blow, of course, I blow that out. And as soon as I come back, I'm panicking. My friend comes up the stairs and said the ritual's over. And I tell him everything that I just told you. And he says, well, to begin the ritual, I have to summon the energies from the east. So that's why the fire might have jumped. And then I banished them to the west, and that's why I jumped again. And I said, well, what about the south? And he said, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, it pinged several times, and it did it throughout the half hour or so you're doing the ritual. And he said, well, I have no idea why it did that.
Oh, that's weird stuff. I guess lucky that everything didn't burn.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's good news in the sense that after he did the banishing ritual, my uncle stopped having all the nightmares.
Well, that is a good thing, but wow, what a story. Thank you very much. Plus, candles pinging? Really? California brings Mark. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Roswell's Art. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Great. Yeah, so I have kind of a crazy story for you. I'm 33 now, and about 10, 12 years ago in college, when I was about 20, I moved into a house with about three other roommates, and it was about two blocks from campus, the University of Arizona, and it was built for the Tucson Electric Power Company president. So we move in and everything's fine, but then within a week, a whole bunch of weird things start happening. Literally the electricity would go off and you would have to walk around and go to the breaker outside the house to turn the electricity back on, in the house.
Right.
And we had, over the course of the year that I lived there, we had, like three or four different electricians come out to check out to see what was wrong with it, and everybody said that it was fine. So there was strange electric stuff that would always happen. One time I was using the regular can opener, and the electric can opener actually started to go off by itself. One of the really creepy things was that we didn't have cable because we were poor college students, and I knew that my roommates weren't home one day, and I wanted to bring this girl back. So we go back to my place, and when we get there, I say, "Hey, let's watch a movie." And so I turn on the TV, and there's that staticky, that snow that you have when you don't have cable. And suddenly there's this bang in the other side of the house, and it's like sounds like dishes crashing. And she says, "What was that?" And I said, "I don't know, but I swear there's something really weird with this house. It's haunted." And suddenly from the TV, through the snow, the static on TV, it said, "No, there's no ghosts here." And
that's not so. Well, it is unusual, but I mean, a lot of times voices and things are heard from white noise, and that's what you had on your TV was white noise. So,
Well, it was so creepy. I mean, I turned off the TV and I looked at her and I said, "Did you hear that?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "What was that?" And she said, "It said there's no ghost here." And we ran out of the house freaking out. But another thing that actually happened.
That my friend, was an EVP answer.
Yeah. So I was filming. We had a party one night and I was going around filming using night vision in the house. And I go up to my friend Gentry and just ask him, "Hey, how you doing?" And he says, "Oh, I'm, good, whatever." The next day when I'm watching the tape, and we go, and all of us are watching the tape the next day of, the party the night before. And suddenly it goes into his room, and I say, "Hey, how you doing?" And it was the most demonic sound that was captured on this tape right when he said hi. It was like this, just this horrible, horrific sound. And the weirdest part about that is that it's been years since all that happened. And for some reason, about a month ago, I was driving with my girlfriend, and it was 11 o'clock at night. And that story kind of, for some reason, I just remembered it right then. And I asked her if she believed in ghosts, and I told her the story and that I had recorded this EVP with my friend Gentry. And I thought to myself, man, I need to call him. I haven't talked to him in a few months. I hope everything's okay. And the next day I got a phone call that Gentry was in a coma. And unfortunately, about 3 days later, he passed away. But the odd thing about that was I just remember that story, like, randomly. And I asked my friend Emily, when did he, you know, slip into the coma? And she said it was around 11 o'clock on that Saturday night. Which was literally, I think it was like 11:15 that I was telling my girlfriend that story. So I don't know if there was some sort of like reach out or connection or something, but it was just, it's something that really kind of like touched me and freaked me out a little bit.
Oh, I hear you. Maybe you should go into the field of EVP investigation.
I'd rather not. I'd rather leave that be.
All right. Thank you very, very much for the call. That's pretty weird. That's a completely uninvited EVP, a television just playing white noise in the background. It is the ideal medium for EVPs. Did you know that? The ideal medium. All right. Let's go to Texas and Roland. Hi.
Hello, Mr. Bell. Is that you?
It is.
Well, I recognize your voice. Nice talking to you. Pleasure's mine. Thank you, sir.
You bet.
I have an experience. It's not a story. This happened to me, so it's very, very disturbing and unsettling, but happened in one of my dreams that came to me, and I was asleep, and at the time I was living and working in Phoenix about 10 years ago or so. And in my dream, I woke up, and I was in a unknown city to me anyway, because it was kind of like New York or Chicago style, a lot of people downtown, you know, going to work, all dressed up in suits.
You're saying you, in essence, woke up in a strange city.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Uh-huh.
And in my dream, I'm climbing the stairs to go up to, like, a high-rise building, and I'm not exactly how high it was, but it had been at least 20, 30, 40 stories.
Right.
And, you know, people are in big cities like that. They go by you and not pay attention, so I'm really not sure what I'm doing there, but I know I have to walk up, and I head towards the elevators for whatever reason. That's where I'm being pulled towards.
Okay.
So I get to the elevator, and as one of them, there's a bank of elevators, and in those big buildings, you have three or four on one side and three or four on the other side, so it must have been a good, you know, half a dozen elevators. So I'm standing in front of one, and the doors open up, and a bunch of people rush in and fill in and, you know, carrying briefcases and purses and stuff. And I decided it was too crowded for me, so I figured I'd catch the next one. I wasn't in any particular hurry. So I wait for the next one. And that one opens up, and the doors open up, and there's no one coming out, and there's really not a crowd any longer. I'm really the only one going to get in. So the doors open up. I notice, I guess, what you call an elevator operator. And he's standing in the corner there, and he's dressed very sharply, you know, nice vest, and very trimmed up, and, you know, very professional looking.
Yes.
But he had this this sense or an aura about him that wasn't natural. So before I actually stepped in, the doors were wide open. He's standing there with his kind of holding his hands and looking at me and smiling, and I picked up right away, you know, who he was, and I got the feeling that he was the Satan himself. And
now this is all in a dream, right?
Yes, sir. This is all in a dream. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so as opposed to an actual ghost encounter, this is a dream, or did it manifest in real life?
No, it's been manifested in real life, but this is how it started. So this is the reason I say that when the doors open up and I had this sort of a fear of actually stepping into it, so I stood there still on the outside of the elevator, doors open, and he kind of just asked me, well, are you getting in or not?
Right.
And I go, well, am I going up or am I going down? You know, asking him if basically if I was going to heaven or going to hell.
In other words, you're in a dream. You don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, but I had the feeling that it was not a good choice to get in right away. So I was basically asking him if I was going up towards heaven or down towards hell, you know, because I had that feeling that maybe I had died in my sleep. And
I'd say up, please.
So then he just looked at me and goes, well, there's not a whole lot of difference for you. So, and then that's kind of when I woke up. I woke up wide awake, and I was sweating, and, you know, and it's been a question for me ever since. I don't know what it means, but...
All right. Well, what it means is probably since you made no choice at all, it's purgatory for you. I don't know. That's a strange one. But it was a dream. Now, to Anthony on Skype. Hello, Anthony.
All right, how are you?
Very well. Where are you, Anthony?
I'm in Stillwater, Minnesota, about 15 minutes outside of Minneapolis.
Well, all right. You have a good ghost story, I hope?
You know, I do, but I'll tell you what. My wife had sent in part of the story to the wormhole to you.
Yes.
And what I want to do is, because she can tell us so much better than I can, and it's really a phenomenal story. So okay. Is it if I hinge it to her? Stella is her name?
Okay, you're breaking up on me a little bit. You're going to put her on the phone. Is that what you're going to do?
That's right. That's
all right. Let's have her.
Okay. All right. Here's Stella.
Stella.
Hello.
Hey, Stella. Hi there.
Hi. Roswell's.
Roswell's. Thank you.
So... our ghost story, we live in a house in historic Stillwater, Minnesota, built in 1860-something.
Mm-hmm.
And we have pretty much had some occurrences since we moved in here 2 years ago in April. It started with whistling, like kind of muffled whistling, not wind or pipes or anything. Believe me, I know what those sound like.
Mm-hmm.
It was somebody whistling a tune, and then I would start to hear like old record music playing, and I went outside to see if some kid was sitting outside out front blasting their car stereo, and nobody in sight. It was only from the house. And then things started to escalate more and more. There would be the sounds of like a glass sitting down on a table, and there'd be no one home. And I was out front of our home, and there was no one inside, and I heard a knock coming from the inside of the front door.
Yeah.
So I was a little afraid to go back inside the house at that moment.
I understand.
Things escalated more and more after that. Knives, like kitchen knives, would fly off of the table in the kitchen, and we have hardwood floors. And it wouldn't just fall down flat, point down, stabbed into the floor inches away from my husband several times. He's fortunate that he hopped out of the way quickly.
This is where I begin to think about moving.
Yes, we actually have been talking to real estate agents, friends, anybody looking for another house to live in.
I've seen that in movies where knives slowly pull out of the holder and sometimes head through midair towards somebody. No. That's it.
That's pretty much what was happening. And then I was sitting on our couch and the TV screen, you know, when a TV's off, you can see the reflection in it still.
Sure.
So I was just kind of staring off in the space, and I saw in the reflection walking towards me a full-bodied, it was not even out of the corner of my eye, I could see it directly, but in the reflection of the TV, a full-bodied, it was a man, it was a figure, and it was walking right towards me. I screamed, jumped up, my husband said, oh my gosh, what's wrong?
Yep.
And then it disappeared, and that was horrifying.
Yeah, that'd be it. That'd be actually the knives would have been it. But then, tell me you did move.
We are still here right now, actually. The spirit here will usually cut off our cell phone conversation. Like, it'll drop the signal on our cell phones if we ever talk about it. Like, the spirit while we're in the house, like if I'm if I call my mommy and talk to her about how I'm scared about the ghost. So it will even cut off on our home landline.
Well,
it'll just drop the call.
Apparently, it's decided not to mess around with Skype.
I'm surprised, actually. I told my husband while he was waiting on the line, I hope it doesn't cut us off of Skype.
You made it through. I, you know, that you're still in the house. I'm amazed.
Well, there's one more thing here I got for you.
Mm-hmm.
I got a strange feeling. In our backyard, our landlord had dug up our old deck. It was all rotting and falling apart, and he put in a new one. And he didn't just dig, you know, post holes for the deck. He kind of dug up the whole front half of the backyard.
Right.
So ground that hadn't been dug up basically since the house was built. I was walking our little tiny teacup chihuahua, Ellie, outside in the backyard. I saw something on the ground in the dirt that had been dug up.
Right.
And it was a human tooth. So I did a little more digging, and I found probably at least 50, 60 human bones in the yard.
Bones? Oh, my God. Now what?
Yes, they're recognizably human parts.
At this point, you call the police.
Yes, we're going to... Yeah, oh, and some very old coins, my husband just reminded me, from early 1900s.
Uh-huh.
It was a little disturbing because...
No, that's not a little disturbing, hon. That's really, really disturbing. And,
I know.
You know, once I'm digging in my backyard and I start finding bones, that's it. I stop. I call the police. But you found, once again, how many bones, please?
I'd say about 50. There's probably near a full, like, set of teeth. And several large, I'm going to assume they're, like, phalange finger bones, you know.
Oh,
but they're all, it doesn't look like somebody just, my friends tell me, oh, well, a long time ago, people would just bury their loved ones in their yard if they couldn't afford a funeral. And I said, well, that sounds a little odd to me anyways. But they're all in, like, hacked up pieces, which doesn't, there's no, I try to rationalize it, like, well, I can't really, actually.
Hacked up pieces, not good. None of this is any good. I don't know, maybe you shouldn't call the police, maybe you should call a priest.
I know, we actually have a friend of ours, her family is friends with the Dalai Lama. So he blessed some herbs, like incense-y herbs for us to burn in the corners of the house, and we're going to
You actually had the Dalai Lama told about this?
Yes, and the Dalai Lama personally blessed and sent us herbs to kind of, that we're supposed to burn them in, I think, like, is it every room? Asking my husband. Every room in the house to get rid of the evil and try to get out whatever's in here, because it's more and more each, almost every day.
Oh.
We're
why are you still there?
Oh, trust me, we have been looking at every single possibility we can to try to find another house to rent, buy, apartment. There have been times where we've thought about, you know, packing up all our pets. We have a cat and a dog and a turtle and a hamster.
I would have thought of that and actually done it.
Yeah, I know. Just.
Oops. Hello? Oh, my. She got cut off. Oh, Lord. All those bones, all those things happening. I'm Art Bell. I'm not over that last story. That thing was way over the top. Way over the top. Ooh. Hacked up human parts in the lawn? No. All the rest of that happening? No, I'd have been so out of there, and then she got cut off. Yikes. Vicky in Michigan, hello. Vicky in Michigan. Are you there? Aw, Vicky's going to miss her chance. Well, sorry about that, Vicky. We will move on. Let's see where to go. Let's go here to John in California. Hello.
John! Oh, hello. I'm here.
Hello.
Oh, Roswell's Art.
Thank you. Who was that?
That was my girlfriend.
Sorry.
Good. I don't know. We've got voices coming out all over the place here. Okay, go right ahead.
Well, good to talk to you again. Experience with Ouija board, bad stuff. My parents had a restaurant. I was probably about 17 or 18. I think I put that in the email. We taught this thing, apparently. And one night, it got nasty.
The thing got nasty.
Yeah, it claimed it was a female, and it said it was from hell. I can't confirm any of this, so I don't know if it was real or not, but
in other words,
it told you
on the Ouija board that it was from hell.
Yes. Uh-huh. And we spoke this thing many times, and one night, me and two of my friends were there. Three bright flashes came out of the mirror, and they were blue, electrically caught back in the 80s, I guess, out of the mirror. There were lights pulling out the mirror, but they were not pulling out lights. There were three bright flashes out of the mirror, and they were blue. So, we got really scared, and we ran out of there.
Okay.
We drove around for about 2 hours. I had to come back because we left everything on in the place. We weren't supposed to be where we were at the time. When we came back, the light outside turned on its own. There was no motion sensor on at the time. It was probably 87 or 88.
Mm-hmm.
And we drove off again.
Mm-hmm.
Came back in. Turned everything off. Left scared. Scared. And pretty much the whole story, but an update. Maybe 2 years ago, the staff was freaked out by doors slamming. I can't confirm this. It's just what I heard. But doors slamming over and over and over and over and over. They came out with knives. I moved away from there a long time ago, but I don't know. Something happened, and that's pretty much my whole story.
Okay, well, I appreciate it, and again, same house, I presume. These hauntings are real. Now, as you listen to these stories, it's not people out there making them up. These are real occurrences. They really do happen. So ghosts or apparitions or whatever it is you want to call them have to be considered to have substance, not a word you would normally associate with something non-human, right? But substance. I think that's a fair way to put it. Here's somebody that's been waiting. Michael in Virginia. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Mike in Virginia, right? And
yes.
This story, we're currently living in Virginia, but the story took place about a haunted home that we purchased in Ohio. And I'm convinced that the house actually picked up because we had spent weeks looking through these little realtor magazines. One evening, my wife said about 2:30 in the morning, she said, I found a place. I said, you know, funny, I found a place. She said, well, mark the spot, we'll look at it in the morning. So that next morning, we had picked the same house. So, and we missed some of the early clues about, you know, this house, like the sage on the mantle when we moved in.
Right.
It started really benign with, like, whispering and just hearing noises. But a couple of the strangest things that happened was one night we were listening to you, and Father Martin Malachi was on.
Oh, yes.
And someone had asked him, is there any danger with even talking about this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And he told you, he said, Art, and I think you asked him the question, he said, Art, he said, even talking about it now can be a problem.
That's right.
And
something you should be thinking about right now.
Well, and what happened The words no more came out of his mouth when we heard this god-awful racket in a closet. Uh-huh. And our cat ran over to the closet. My wife jumped up from her computer, and we opened the door, and it sounded, if I could describe it to you, it sounded like a large bird thrashing in the closet.
Oh.
Opened up the closet door, nothing. And
not good.
The cat ran out of the room. I mean, that was kind of strange. But probably the oddest thing that happened, my wife was working on her doctorate, and she had gotten up early one morning to go do some research on the computer, and the computer room was just like maybe 5 paces from the bedroom. Well, so as not to disturb me, she closed the bedroom door. And I could hear her typing away on the computer, and it was, you know, and I'd be, you know, sleeping in.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, you hear bam, 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 3 loud knocks on the bedroom door. I thought, well, that's odd. She must have locked herself out. I get out of bed. I reach for the door and open it, and my wife is reaching to open it from her side, and she said, why are you knocking on the door? And I mean, it was just, you know, you talk about, gee, why don't you move out of this place?
Yeah, you know, when you move in and you see sage, that's the big tip-off right there.
Art, it really should have been. And I just want to tell you one cat story. I know you're a cat fan here.
Mm-hmm.
We had a cat, a little cat Scraps, that we had for 13 years. And we were moving to Virginia, and she was in really, really poor health, and we decided to have her euthanized before we took her to Virginia, before we moved to Virginia. Well, my wife and I were, and she had this little cage, like a travel cage she used to love to sleep on in the kitchen.
Right.
And my wife and I were in the family room, and all of a sudden we heard this god-awful racket. If you can imagine somebody just bouncing this cage around the kitchen. I jumped up off the couch. The cat's on the cage. The cage is coming off the ground 5 or 6 inches, bouncing straight up and down.
Really not good.
No, it wasn't good. The cat jumped off, and about the same time I hollered at my wife, I said, come in here, come in here, come in here. You got to see this.
Mm-hmm.
And just as she came, and this thing continued to bounce, Art, for probably 10 seconds after the cat got off. And I'm not talking just like shaking. I'm talking straight up, straight down, straight up, straight down.
Yes, sir.
And just as my wife came around the corner, it stopped. So, but this house had just so many little things like that, and probably the very worst, and I didn't tell my wife this until after we moved out of the house, but we had 3 cats, and we had our pantry down in the basement, and I'm coming up the steps, and I'm not afraid of cats. Things don't bother me, because we lived in this place for 13 years, but all of a sudden I heard this low, guttural kind of growling coming from the corner of the basement. And I thought, wow, that sounds like the cats are really getting to get into one, you know? That's
right.
What I'm telling myself. But the hair is standing up on the back of my neck. Well, just as I get to the top of the steps, I look over, and all 3 cats are curled up in the sunlight coming through the kitchen window. There was a cat now in the basement.
So it wasn't the cats at all?
Not at all, Art.
Mm-hmm.
So,
All I can tell you, sir, is take sage advice and don't live in a place like that. The whole cat thing jumping up and down, bad. The growling in the corner, really bad. let's go to Skype. You're on the air. Hello, it's Aku, I believe.
Oh, it's me?
It's you, yes. Aku, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Finland.
Finland?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, welcome.
Well, I'm glad to be on. Can't believe it. I'm on, actually kind of a shock.
Well, you actually are, yes.
Yeah, well. Roswell, first of all.
Thank you.
I'm a big fan of yours. Been for a long time.
Finnish Roswells. Excellent.
All right, yeah. Well, it's ghost time today, so I guess I'm going to go for a ghost story too.
Good.
And I hope you understand my bad English, but...
So far, so good.
Okay, thanks. Well, this is actually a second-hand story, so I don't have a first-hand story to tell you, but second-hand is going to... It's a good one.
All right.
Well, I have a friend who works as a security guard, and there's a mansion nearby, and he has to, like, go around it very often, once in a day or so, go all around all the rooms and so forth.
Yeah, check it in. That's what a security guard does. Yes, you have to go around all the rooms. Mm-hmm.
And he has an electronic clock when he goes when he checks out.
Yes, sir.
And he has to put the right code in there. And so when he puts the right code, there's a it kind of goes in the alarm on mode. So if there's someone in the mansion, it of course alarms the local police or so forth. So you put the right code in and wait for the right signal on the green light or so forth. And well, the story goes that he puts the right code in, and what's good, instead of very good the green light like always, but you get also a child laughing. And I know you like child, especially child ghost. But anyway, you put the right code in, and you hear a child laughing. Well, of course, you disable the alarm system to check if there's really a child in. Well, you go in, it's totally dark. Well, you can't see anything. Mm-hmm. You can't hear anything either. So you just, you go out and put your code on again, and you see the green light going again, seeing that, okay, the alarm system is on again, and you just wait, and you hear the child again laughing. Well, you just, what else there is to do, you just have to put the alarm code on again and check the inside again to see if there is anyone inside, but there's no one inside, and what can you do? You just have to go outside again and put the code again, and after that, it didn't appear again, but
it was
anyway,
something. So, in other words, it was something. Once it does it again and again and again like that, either you've got a bad alarm system, or you've got something that you probably don't want to know about. All the way from Finland. Okay, let's make another choice. Always hard to choose, but we'll go to New Mexico and Candace. Candace.
Well, happy Halloween, Art and Roswell.
Thank you.
I have a ghost story for you.
Okay.
In the late summer of 2011, a really close friend, Holly, moved to Louisville, Kentucky.
Huh?
So on Halloween weekend, another friend, Debbie, and I went to visit her, and she had lined up a ghost tour. And this is something that you walk around downtown Louisville, and they bring you here and there, and there were five or six stops on the trip. And
very interesting, but I guess in a tour you don't really expect to see a ghost.
No, and to top it off, up until we arrived at the Brennan House, the main event had been the wind chill index. It was so cold, and we were hanging behind the rest of the tour group. There was another lady that had had hip surgery recently, so we were going to hang back with her. And we arrived at the Brennan House. This is a historic mansion, and a family had lived in it for a couple of generations, and they were doctors and lawyers, a very talented family, but beautiful home, everybody crowding around the front, trying to get photographs of the orbs that the guide was telling us we were sure to capture. And we hung back, let everybody take all their photographs, and as people were starting to trek off to the next place, we stepped in and started taking a few photographs, and I was the last one to linger, and I'm standing there taking some shots. I'm not seeing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, I have both feet firmly planted on the sidewalk, and by the way, this is a reasonably dark street. There's nobody on the street, and Holly and Debbie are walking away, and come on. I'm like, okay, and suddenly I am roughly shoved in my left shoulder hard enough to knock me off of my feet forward, and I'm thinking, okay, somebody shoved me. I turn around to tell them how rude I think they are, and there's nobody in the street.
Nobody there.
And my first thought, I swear, my first thought was, don't scream, go get the girls. So I quickly walked toward them, and I said, you guys, come back here. I swear to God, somebody just pushed me, and they're like, there's nobody here. And I'm like, exactly. We dash back, and the three of us are standing in front of this house in the dark, and we're taking photographs, and I just had this feeling that, like, the hair on the back of your neck stands up.
Yes.
And I felt like somebody was approaching me, and I knew we were the only three there, and I said, Debbie, I'm still taking photographs. Debbie, there's somebody around us. And I said, take some pictures of me. I feel like there's somebody by me.
And
so she did. And as a matter of fact, I entered this photograph in the photo contest.
Oh, my.
Yes, it was.
Okay,
called...
explain to me, since I'm not there right now, what came out in the photograph?
Well, it's hard to explain. I've never seen that kind of light anomalies in a picture, first of all. A lot of white streaking lights. I'm holding still in the photograph, and none of us are real proficient photographers. We just rely on our auto-schmato cameras.
Sure.
But particularly just behind me, up at the top of my head, there is a man there, and he has like a pasty face, dark eyes, deep dark eyes, and like an old-timey haircut where he had like a little pompadour thing in the front, maybe.
And you're telling me in real life this man was not there?
No, there was no one but us three ladies on this street.
Well, one thing is getting pushed. I mean, you know when you're pushed.
Exactly. I mean, and you know, Debbie's taking these photos, and she's not seeing anything. She thinks she's photographing me. And
right.
So she turns and takes some more, and we're like, okay, now we're really behind. We got to get going. And I'm just like, okay, this is weird. And so we finish the tour, and we all go back to Holly's house, and hit the sack, and we wake up in the morning, and we're all getting our coffee on, and we're in our jammies in the kitchen, and we have the bar stools pulled up to the counter, and we're looking through our photographs, and I happen to pick up Debbie's camera, and like, what are all these lights in this photograph? And I, to myself, and I'm looking, I'm like, oh my goodness, this can't be. I mean, you don't even anticipate something like that in a photograph of yourself. And I said, oh my God, Debbie, look at this photograph. And she took the camera from me and just simply shrieked.
Yeah. Absolutely. Listen, I'm with you all the way. You might expect lights, you know, orbs. I don't know. Orbs have been said to be souls, and I don't know about that. Streaks of light, normal in photography, right? But, one, getting shoved by something, not at all normal. And number two, a man appearing in a photograph where there was no man. Really, really strange. All right, we'll break here. This is Spooky Matter on Halloween night. I'm Art Bell. That's quite a laugh he's got, isn't it? All right, let's see who's been hanging. Colorado's been hanging. Hi, Darren.
Hey, Art. How you doing? Roswell's.
Thank you.
When I was in college, I worked at one of the most haunted radio stations in America. It was
many stations actually are haunted.
Really? Well, I didn't know that when I took this job. I was an overnight DJ on a classic rock station. It was Case Guy Radio in Deadwood, South Dakota.
And okay, Deadwood.
The address, believe it or not, dead serious, was 666 Main Street, Deadwood, South Dakota. So we think it was a portal for ghosts because of the strange address in Deadwood, South Dakota, 666 Main Street. But everybody that worked at the radio station knew about a ghost named Doc Smiley.
Mm-hmm.
He was a dentist from the 1880s to the 1920s in Deadwood, and he had a dentist practice at the location of the radio station in the second floor where the radio station was located. We were located right across from the number 10 saloon, where Wild Bill Hickok got shot and killed by Jack McCall, you know, in the 1800s.
Sure.
So there's a lot of history in that town. A lot of people met untimely deaths in Deadwood, South Dakota, and that's why I think there were a lot of ghosts in that town, too. And one of them used to hang out at the radio station and do crazy things when, especially overnights.
poor overnight guys.
You said they're overnight. One night, you remember the old AP teletype machines that used to,
clearly, yes,
used to come over?
Of course, yes.
One night we were there, and the dentist office was converted into a newsroom. And through a double-pane glass, we looked through the glass, and we saw a man standing there in Old West garb. And we thought that was pretty strange. We walked around the corner, and nobody was there. So he was gone. And then another time when we were working there, for whatever reason, whenever we played Led Zeppelin's Whole Lot of Love, things seemed to kind of kick up at that radio station. Crazy things would happen.
Really?
We would have clocks on the wall would turn upside down. The old carts, you know, that we used to play that had the commercials on, we'd find them stacked weird or turned upside down. Just all kinds
of
weird
things. Well.
Mm-hmm. All kinds.
Well, actually, we used to, for example, if you played a cart and you didn't allow it to recue, you would automatically turn it upside down to remind yourself to cue it.
You're right. Yeah, that's true. Uh-huh. So you remember how we used to stack those? Well, they would be all, you know, changed around if you walked out of the room and came back. So it was just crazy things like that used to happen when you worked overnights at that radio station. Through the corner of your eye, you'd see dark figures walking down the hall. Doorways would creak and slam by themselves. And one night I was working late during a blizzard, and about 3:30 in the morning, I heard a really loud demonic roar come from down the hallway. So I thought it was one of my friends playing a trick on me. So I went running down the hall to see if I could catch him. Went down the stairs, and it was a snowstorm. I looked out the door, and there were no tracks or anything. So I knew that nobody else was at the station other than me. So it kind of freaked me out the rest of the night.
I'm sure. Well, there are so many stories. I don't know why radio stations are the target of hauntings, but they are. It's true. Now, I don't know why any radio station, particularly one in Deadwood, would allow itself to be marked as 666 in their address. Let's go to Skype. And Michael, hello.
Good evening, Art.
Good evening.
My story is kind of an ongoing story.
Okay, Michael, you're kind of not, you don't have good audio. Can you move a little bit or something?
Yeah. Is that better?
A little. Back away a little more.
Okay, well, I bought the microphone. Is that better?
Well, not really, so just go ahead and talk in the mic.
Okay. I moved into this house 12 years ago, and every evening between 7 and 9, there's a thump at the door.
Right.
It's like someone hitting it, not knocking. And through the years, I go to the door and look out the peephole, and nothing's there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just kind of blew it off as, you know, it's my ghost. Well, one night I decided, okay, I'm going to go outside and sit out there and see if this is the kids or what. And I went outside and I stayed out till about 9:30, come back in the house and sit down. I get a thump again.
Mm.
And so I don't know what this is. It's been going on for 12 years. And I called you about 3 weeks ago and told you that my cat sees something flying around the room.
Sure.
And you told me that you don't want to know what it is because if it would get a hold of me,
mm-hmm.
it would tear me up. That's probably haunted would. Me ever since.
You know, yeah, well,
you scared the hell out of
me. Keep your eye on your cat, Michael. And thank you very much for the call. Yeah, sure. Cats see these things. There's absolutely no question about it. Anybody with a cat knows. Texas brings Mark. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Mr. Bell. How are you this evening?
I'm great. Thank you.
Well, happy Halloween. Well, we've only got 25 minutes left here in Texas.
Uh-huh. That's enough.
Well, my story is about my twin brother, my identical twin brother, with whom I was extremely close. Back in 2003, December of 2003, he took his life.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And obviously it was crushing beyond words for me. And in the weeks and months following his passing, we were close. Even for twins, we were extraordinarily close.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, from the very beginning, I sort of always felt that I would receive some communication from him. I didn't really have doubt. I had doubt as to how it would happen and if it happened in a place that would make other people think I might be insane or something like that. But I really thought it would happen, you know, eventually. But as the months went on, and this is, you know, now 3 or 4 months into after his passing, I had not yet received any communication from him, and I was very, I just wanted to know he still existed. I didn't, at that point, I was still in shock. I was pretty fearless. I thought, you know, even if the Catholics are right and they go to the bad place, if they do something like that, well, then I can figure out a way to get him out of there somehow. I really just wanted to know he still existed. And so I got home one day from work, and this was, again, probably 4 or 5 months at the most after he passed. I was working a very manually intensive job, so I would come home sweaty and grimy. And, of course, in Austin, Texas, it's, you know, by April, it's already in the 90s at least.
Sure.
And so would come home, immediately take a shower, get the grime off, and I was in the shower, and all of a sudden, a song came into my head, and it was, I didn't attach any significance to it at the time. It was a song from Paul's favorite band of all time called The Smiths. And so, I exercised my God-given right as a person living by myself to sing in the shower, which I immediately started to do.
Mm-hmm.
And within 1 or 2 seconds of my starting to sing
this song, which I did not think of. The song came to me and sort of asked to be sung in an odd way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think...
what happened?
So I started singing it, well, within, you know, before I got probably the first full line of the song out, I instantly knew my brother was fortunately not in the shower with me. He was right outside the shower curtain. I knew exactly the elevation of where he was. I knew how far away from the shower curtain he was. Everything about him was there. And the feeling was so strong, I had absolutely no need to look beyond the shower curtain to see if there was any wispy smoke or, you know, if there would be wind in my hair. I mean,
should have asked him to hand you a towel.
Yes. Right.
Well, okay. I understand that's very comforting for you, and I don't know how to interpret that, and whether I do interpret that as a ghost, I might interpret that as your own mind doing something that provided the comfort that you had been wanting. And I don't mean to diminish your story in any way, but as told, that's kind of how I would interpret it. On Skype comes Lisa. Hello, Lisa.
Hi. This, I'm a first-time caller.
Oh, where are you? Lisa, where are you?
I'm good.
No, not how are you, where are you?
Oh, I'm a truck driver, and I'm currently in North Carolina.
Okay.
So, my husband was in the Navy, and we were stationed in Guam, and he was out at sea, and my little girl was about 2 years old at the time, and we were sitting in the living room having McDonald's for lunch,
mm-hmm.
and she looks over at the staircase, which is off to her left, and I'm off to her right, sitting on the couch. And she's looking at the staircase, and she turns around, and she looks at me, and she says, "Mom, can I give that man a French fry?" And I said, "Yeah, okay, sure." And she turns back around and looks toward the staircase again, and then she looks back at me and says, "Where'd he go, Mom?" And I said, "I don't know, baby. I never saw the man."
Mm-hmm.
That was just, that's it. That's
okay, well, that's a good one, I guess. There could have been a man there that you didn't see.
Mm-hmm.
Or...
Yeah, like, he was only about two, so...
Okay. Well, I appreciate the story. Thank you very much. Again, with that one, I'm not sure what to do with it. There could have been a man there, or there could have been a man there that only she saw. Kind of hard to say, huh? Let's go to New Hampshire and Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Art. How's Wells?
Thank you.
Good. Well, my story started about 23 years ago. My father had rented a house from his boss, split entry house, cathedral ceilings, beautiful place. The first night that we moved in, my first night there was actually quite bad. I started with a really bad dream of me coming out on the back porch. We had like a large deck, and I saw this old man there. And he was sitting at a table, and when he turned around, his eyes were hollowed out. They were gone.
Bad.
And he had his teeth were rotten. And just recalling it, actually, it makes me nervous.
Apparently, the eyes go before the teeth.
Yeah. And but not only that, though, he looked quite old. But I woke up from it. But when I woke up from it, I was wide awake, and there were these big balls of light that were zigzagging through my room, and I was terrified for it. They were like giant, I mean, people talk about like spirit orbs. I mean, this was back in the early 90s before there were any ghost shows or anything. But
right.
There were these giant orbs that were like with long tails zigzagging around my room. But that was just the first night, and a lot of things happened. you know, in the beginning, I didn't tell anyone because it was my parents and my brother. I was 16 years old. And it got to the point where I'd get up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night.
Now, I would have told everybody. Yeah. And you're not telling anybody about this?
Well, I was 16 years old. I was scared, you know, and I didn't know what my parents would think. You know, we weren't very religious. My father was an atheist. And my father, you know, he served in Vietnam. He was hard as nails, still is today. And, you know, he just didn't believe in that stuff. Mm-hmm. And, but I get up all the time. I used the bathroom. Now, on the main floor, I mean, this place was huge, big living room, a den, you know, and then my brother's room was next to mine, and adjacent to ours was my parents' room. And I'd be so afraid to get up to use the bathroom because there'd be a giant mist going down the hallway. I mean, you walk into the hallway, and it was freezing cold.
Really?
And I would run down. The hallway was long. I mean, this place was a mansion, but it was big. And I would run into the bathroom. And while I was using the bathroom, I could hear whispering and footsteps all through the house. And I'm just summarizing it because it's a long story, and I'm still being terrorized by a lot of it today. And so is my family. But, you know... there was one occasion, like back in the 90s, with the old computers. If on the older computers, when you use a program in high res, the screens would flicker. So you'd go out and buy one of those special screens you put on with Velcro, and they would stop the flicker on the screen. Back in the old days, it was PCs and Commodore Amigas and whatnot.
Sure, yeah, oh, I remember.
Yeah. But well, I used to love to write, and I still do. And as I was using my computer, I looked up, and there was this twisted face staring over my shoulder. And, of course, this was like 11 o'clock at night. It was just, I mean, I could see the eyes even now. They were red, but they weren't, like, glowing red. They were pupils, but they were reptile-like. And I jumped out of my chair.
You know, most people, I would say move, but you, in your case, I don't think it would do a darn bit of good, whatever
I eventually told my parents, and they thought I was losing my mind. And, you know, they're like, are you sure, Mike, you're not just dreaming these things up? And I said, no. Well, I finally built up enough nerve to talk to my brother, whose name is Jim. Come to find out, he was experiencing the same thing, seeing the faces and the screens and seeing figures in the house. You know, I could give a furnished basement downstairs, and that's where the laundry room was. And I'd go downstairs in the laundry, and as I go to walk back upstairs, I hear someone whisper my name. And, of course, I start running up the stairs. Right, I start running up the stairs. When I turn around, I see this white figure with bulging eyes. I can't describe what it looks like. You know, it wasn't so much later that I seen, like, these UFO doctor.
Oh, guy, you're haunted. I mean, you are just thoroughly, completely followed and haunted. That's all there is to it. You don't bother moving. Obviously, that thing will come with you. Good heavens to Betsy, will be right back on Spooky Matter. There are people like that. No matter what they do, they're haunted. The wormhole yields the following. John says, I think your show is overwhelming XM Internet tonight. Been trying to maintain a connection for the last 2.5 hours. Can't stay connected for over 15 minutes. And trouble getting their webpage to load back on. Horrible. Sorry, John. Yes, we're aware of the troubles, and we're monitoring them. And I'll have something to say about all that tonight. But, yes, it's rough. We know. All right. Let's... Well, let me see here. How about Washington and Craig? Hello, Craig.
Hey, I'm here.
Okay. Mr. Bell? Then it's your turn. Yes, it is, Mr. Bell. I'm fine.
All right. Well, I was going to tell you, as I left the bowl out, trick or treat, take as many Roswells as you would like.
Thank you.
You're still there?
Yes.
Right. Well, yeah, you know, this story thread is kind of a little bit difficult to just get down in one sentence. It's got to be a few things that kind of equates around some of the history of the property that I was on.
And this goes back to an area called Clarksburg, not in Pennsylvania or anywhere back east. It's actually in California. It's about 14 miles from the Capitol steps.
Okay.
UC Davis in the 1980s, 1890s, I should say, uptight here about that, but formed this conglomeration about reclamation of properties that were taken over by the floodplains of the Delta. So they came in and they went with this whole invention about pumping out the water and spilling out the lands. Well, these were sacred lands to the Indians of that place.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, what they did was they were able to get the pumping stations in and get this one area reclaimed, which pretty much reclaimed the whole Delta region of the Sacramento area and then down in San Joaquin.
Okay.
But this guy named John McClellan, the person that did the landscaping there in Golden Gate Park, came in and did all of the landscaping on this property, and they made this property the signature soap piece of this land.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of goes on from there, where there was something spiritual about this land to the Native Americans that were occupying it and living in that area. This is something that they claimed as their own, and this is where they buried a lot of their dead. It was high ground, but it was also something near the water, and then you know you have all the effluent of all the levees and dikes and things that were naturally mm-hmm. created there. So they felt that. So it kind of comes down to where there's a lot of key players in this. I guess what we need to do is cut this short because...
We do. We do, yes.
I know. I'm going there with you. There are a lot of people there that are involved in this, but one of the people that came into the hands of this property was a guy named Gus Sands, and this is all public record, and I can talk
okay,
about
just,
this.
Okay, just sort of tell me what happened. In other words...
You just want to get right to the heart, case, huh?
Yeah, the heart of the story.
Okay. Well, anyway, there was a lot of figurative things that happened in this event.
Yes.
And what we were doing is we were trying to bring this property back up to market, and we were working on it. And so,
right.
You know, and as we were working with it, we had a lot of characters involved in it, which are all the threads, and maybe someday I'll write a book. Who knows? But not for tonight's listeners, okay?
Okay.
So what we're doing is, in the summers in Sacramento, they get very hot sometimes. And
yes.
So we would do the siesta thing, you know, lay down about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, and get yourself a little cooled off. Now, I happen to have a water bed at the time. I used to take the sheets off and just lay on the cool bed. You know how that is.
Right.
Well, I had this event where kept having these kind of weird dreams about electricity, and I'm an electrician, so I didn't figure it was more than just my imagination, but in some of these dreams, I was being lifted up through a light socket up in the ceiling, and then I'd come away with physical marks.
Physical
so
marks. There, that can happen in dreams, yeah.
Well, no, I exhibited them to people that saw them and thought maybe I was just scratching my leg. No, there were handprints where I could not put them on my ankle.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, those are weird enough things. But and there was a lot of other things that tailed into this. But I guess the most amazing thing about this whole story is that I met this gal, and she was very spiritual. As a matter of fact, she was kind of a handler for this fertility.
Okay, we're going to actually have to get to the heart of the story, the end of the story, I guess.
All right, we're going to go right to it then, I guess. That's
okay.
What you want.
Mm-hmm. Right yes.
To the meat. So it happened that I was with this one particular gal, and she was a runway model and was a handler for the salad agency, and she was very spiritual, and she did a lot of healing
right.
things. And we had all that energy going. There was a lot of energy connected to this property to begin with, and which I didn't get a chance to tell you about all that. But as it turns out, like I said, I had these recurring dreams. But one night, you know, we were resting, and then I fell asleep. And then in my dream, I was going in and out of from the bedroom to the kitchen. And the kitchen was a brightly lit, really beautifully, you know, kind of like green, and then a checkerboard foundation on the bottom. And the lights were dimming up and down. And the gal was following behind me in my dream.
but it was all well lit. It was all just like you would see it in your waking state. Okay, so, you know, and then I kind of looked behind me. I told her, I says, wake me up. The spooks are here. Because I used to refer to these guys as spooks. They used to haunt the property. So somehow I was like back in bed, and she was holding me down on the bed because she said I kept coming off the bed, levitating. And
levitating.
That those were her words, levitating.
Okay.
Off, like I said, going towards the fixture in the ceiling above my bed.
Well, you apparently liked electricity.
I guess as an electrician, I guess I would.
Okay, well, thank you, Craig, but we just sort of didn't get there. The levitating part was definitely interesting, but boy, that was a long trip. Let's go to Texas and Bill. Hello, Bill.
All right, what a pleasure. First off, I got to tell you, Megan Roswell's, and it is so good to hear your voice. I've
thank
loved
you
for years, and you're so much better than anybody else out there. Okay. I'm a doctor. I am 67 years old. And back when I was in medical school, I was an exchange student. And I went to the University of London, Middlesex Hospital. And their hospitals and their doctors and their nurses were really great, but they were a lot less, they used a lot less technology than we did. The nurses were called sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And in working with the patients, I had a patient ask me about a very kind, nice lady that offered her tea. And who was that person? Well, I didn't know who that was. And I asked around in the hospital. And this is something that all the hospital staff knew, but none of the patients knew. And they didn't want anybody to talk about it at all. And the story of a ghost named the Gray Lady.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out that patients that ended up dying right before they would die would see this apparition that they thought was a nurse, but she was dressed. Mm-hmm. She was dressed as the old nurses back then did, before the current ones. And this is, I'm talking about the 70s, so even before that. And she would offer them tea, and they would be dead within 24 hours.
Wow!
And they told the story. Yes.
There was a story kind of like this that was actually in the mainstream press not long ago about a cat that would go and curl up next to somebody. I think it was in a nursing home. And
okay.
every time this cat went to somebody, they would, within, as you point out, 24 hours or so, die.
Right. Well, you know, I didn't read about that, but that's the kind of thing that was going on there. But they had their own theory about it. And then one time they told the story, the staff there, about an apparently well patient that said, who was that really nice lady that wanted to know if I wanted tea? And this was a lady that was doing well and was.
Oh, no.
Yes.
I see it coming. I hear it coming.
Right. And she was dead within 24 hours of a pulmonary embolus, a blood clot to her lungs.
My
and nobody
God.
Thought she was going to die. So it wasn't like somebody was just going to the people that we expected to die.
I hear you.
And the theory they had about it was that this was a nurse who was taking care of people in the old days in that hospital, Middlesex Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And a patient had asked her for some tea, and she forgot about it, forgot to bring it. And the patient died. And so their theory was after she died, this was their way of making amends to try to comfort the patients that were about to die. And they
wow.
believed it totally. They were totally convinced of it, and they wouldn't let anybody tell it to anybody outside the circle of people that worked there. Because
as a doctor, how did you feel about this?
You know, I have seen so many things that you wouldn't think was possible. People live that you wouldn't think should have lived.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on board with it. I really am. I mean, I think there's more things out there than people know about.
Obviously so. Thank you very much. That's very interesting from a doctor. It would be interesting, wouldn't it, to hear from other physicians that I know have heard many and have seen many, many things that should not be possible and yet are. Still, as a doctor, as a scientist, actually, and you can refer to a doctor, I think, as a scientist of sorts, right? Very well schooled. It's almost ingrained in them to, well, you know, chuckle at this sort of thing. And yet they meet up with it. And as they do again and again and again, I wonder how it affects them. All very, very interesting. All right, let me look at the times. Obviously, Marty in California has been waiting a long time. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Art. How are you?
Fine.
I just wanted to tell you about something that happened to our family. I adopted my three little grandchildren, and the 10-year-old granddaughter of mine, she went over to a friend's house to spend the night, and she'd been over there a couple of times before, and it had taken her a while to go back, and I just thought maybe it was just her and the little girl maybe, you know, had gotten into words or something. Kids do that. Anyway, she went over, and she called me the next morning, and this is a child that doesn't get excited over anything. She was, "Grandma, you have to come and get me right now." And I said, "What's wrong with you?" And she said, "You just have to come and get me right now, Grandma. You can't, you just stop doing anything you're doing and you come and get me." So I got in the car and I went over there. I knew it wasn't just a child thing. So I picked her up and she ran and got in the car and I left and I come home and I told her, I said, "See, what happened to you?" And she said, "Nothing, Grandma." And I said, "Did someone hurt you, or did someone scream at you? Did someone touch you?" "No, Grandma, I'm okay. I'm okay." And so I just let her go because I thought maybe it was just nothing. And that evening, it was about time to go to bed, she came in and she said, "Grandma, I need to talk to you alone." So we went in my bedroom and she just broke down and started crying hard and shaking. And I said, "What is wrong with you?" And she said, "Grandma, there's two black figures in that house over there." And she said, "They're real bad." And I said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "Last night when I was asleep," she said, "something was breathing in my ear." Mm-hmm. And then she said, "Well," and it started pulling me across the carpet and had me by my ankle. And she said, I went to the shower and the next morning, and she said that it was something was on the other side of the shower curtain, and she got so scared that she ran out without even drying off. And she said, "Grandma, it's playing with that lady's babies."
Oh,
she has a little baby, so
right.
I had to make her a bed next to my bed because she just was hysterical. She was so scared and traumatized, and so the next morning I called my friend and I said, "You need to come over here because we need to talk." And she came over and I told my granddaughter, I said, "Tell her what you told me." And she just broke down crying again. She said, "There's two black things over there and they're playing with your baby." Mm-hmm. And my girlfriend, she completely fell apart. And so I told her she needed to ride home and I said, "Well, I'll give you a ride until," and my granddaughter said, "Well, I don't want to go." I said, "Come on, Sissy, I'm not going to leave you alone, home alone, so you go. We're not going to get out." So I drove up in the driveway, and it's kind of an upgraded driveway, uphill a little.
Yes.
I pulled up there, and the lady got her baby, and she got out. And, you know, this lady's hysterical. She doesn't know what to do, and she's scared, too. And I told her, "Whatever you do, don't keep the baby from them. It might make whatever it is mad. You know, and then it could really, if it's playing with a baby and not bothering it." Anyway, she got out, and all of a sudden, my 10-year-old granddaughter started kicking the back of the passenger seat. She was screaming like somebody was stabbing her. She said, "Go, Grandma, go, he's coming out the bathroom window." It was a two-story. And I said, "Oh, my God." And she said, she just was screaming hysterical, "Grandma, go, go, go." So
and
I flew out of there.
And you saw nothing?
No, I didn't see anything. I was having some kind of cardiac arrest when she was doing this because it scared me so bad.
Yeah.
And seeing her hysterical. So I flew out of the driveway, almost tore up my car, got her home. She was just hysterical for days and days. Slept next to my bed. I had to get a see-through shower curtain because she was worried about something being on the other side. I mean, it took a couple of months before she was sleeping in her own room. And
right. I would suppose that this kind of thing would put you into a state of shock. So that, yes, you wouldn't want to be in the shower, and if you were, you'd want to be able to see out. And playing with babies? No, I think not. Perhaps it would be interpreted by somebody as play. But it only takes once, right? Let's go to Jeff in California. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, Art. How are you?
Quite well, thank you.
Great, great. I'm a little nervous, so you'll have to bear with me a little bit. I'll try my best here.
Best thing to do is take a deep breath and just relax.
Yeah, we're not all used to being on the radio like you are. I have a ghost story that happened to me. It was back in June of 1985. A friend of mine that I grew up with had the same birthday, and I hadn't seen him for a few years. And we always tried to get together on her birthday because we had the exact same birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, he ended up in a little town. It's called Lake Elsinore. And I drove out there. We got together, and we went to... I asked him, you know, if there were any old abandoned houses or anything like that to visit, because that's what we did a lot of when we were growing up. And he told me there was this great one nearby, and we went by it. It was this gigantic structure, and it was left over from, like, the 1920s.
All kids so, love abandoned houses. I spent some time in a few.
Oh, yeah, it was always fun to explore when we were kids, you know. So I was just kind of doing a little catching up and all of that. But when I saw this place, I was just extremely intimidated. It was just massive, you know. And he's like, we're going to go in there tonight after dinner. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me, you know. It's just huge. So we went and ate. And driving towards the place, we ran into a friend of his walking down the street, told him about it, went to his place, got a crappy...
I guess we just lost that.
Place.
Oh, you are there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Did we cut off? Or?
Yeah, for a second.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know what that was.
Anyway, go ahead.
So we went through this place, and it was extremely, extremely huge. It just took hours and hours to go through every bit of this place, room after room, on and on and on. Went through there, went out the back, and trying to explain this, because we went up an outside staircase, and we're sitting next to a room up there, just at the top of the stairs, and suddenly I heard footsteps down below, and I was extremely, you know, we were all very nervous. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, who's in there? And no one said a word, and we're just sitting there, and the footsteps got closer and closer and closer and closer until they were upstairs on the level we were at, and these footsteps came right up. I had my back to a door that was just pitch black in this room. And, I mean, whoever, whatever it was walking just right up within arm's length of me. And it was just, you know, had no idea who was there, and we just jumped up and we bolted out of this place as fast as we possibly could, you know. And it was just really... I mean, I was just really shook up about that. Like, you know, who the heck was that? Well, I went back the next day, drove out
there. Now, why would you go back after that?
Well, because I just went out to visit. It was broad daylight.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you went back.
Yeah, and the thing that just, you know, really got me was that seeing in the daylight, these footsteps that I heard, and they were as plain as can be, they were in a room below us, and they came upstairs. And it's just, to make it quick, whatever was making those footsteps, and they were as clear as my voice is,
mm-hmm.
this person or whatever it was went through the ceiling and went through walls, came, you know, it was just, there was no way to go from the lower level where the footsteps started except to come outside into this back courtyard and come up the flight of stairs at the top of which we were sitting at.
Well, so, ghosts, you know, ghosts can do that. I mean, they can go through
Kidding. I mean, but I, you know, I just couldn't figure that out. Well, I stayed there the whole day. I mean, we were hanging out, and we went back to that night. I had brought a really big flashlight with me. We went through the whole place again. Nothing happened. We went out the back again, and we went out into the courtyard. We went up the same flight of stairs back to the very same room, went inside. It's like peering through there. There's a little bathroom. It's all broken up. I mean, this place is abandoned. It's been that way for quite some time. And then as we're peering into this bathroom with a flashlight, all of a sudden there's this loud boom noise. But it was so strange because it was like just a second before that noise, we both just sort of simultaneously jumped back a step together. And then this noise, and then these bats come flying out of this bathroom, you know. And, like, they're all, you know, I mean, brushing through the hair and across the face and everything. But I heard these two very distinct grunting noises, very low, guttural grunt. And it was like, bats don't make that kind of noise. And in my head, now I'm not telling you, so I heard a voice say, get out. I did not. But in my head, those words translated to that, if that makes sense. Yeah,
well, it makes sense, and you should have gotten immediately out. That's certainly what I would have done. California and David.
Art, how are you?
Well, very well, thank you.
Fantastic. It's a pleasure to talk to you, especially on Halloween.
Yes, sir.
My ghost story goes back to 1988. I had just graduated high school and was working at this garden center in Pasadena, California. And it was a great place. It was, you know, a lot of the structures on the property were back from the early 1900s. And one day I'm in one of the buildings, and about a 15 by 15 room, and I'm against one of the sides of the building, cutting up some paper, and I end up backing up into a ghost.
And how does one know you've backed up into a ghost?
Well, I felt the person behind me when I stepped back. My foot ended up on their foot, so my heel didn't touch the ground, and I felt like I pushed a body back, and I turned around. I thought it was my boss having snuck up behind me, and I turned around, and you know, this is a big room, and there was nothing there. And by the time I stopped running...
I don't know. Yeah, that's right. Thank you. You ran. That's what I would have done, too. You know, well, when you're bumping into a body, you can feel it. It's very solid. So, yeah,
absolutely.
Run.
I mean, I literally turned around and said, I'm sorry, and I don't think I got the word sorry out. you know, I ended up coming back into the store. I literally ran probably a couple hundred feet out into the street, mm-hmm. and came back and talked to a couple of the employees there, and they had told me that up to three people had killed themselves on that site, and that just freaked me out. But,
well, I would say you definitely had an encounter with, you know, I'm not going to say disembodied spirit, because it sounds like that spirit had a body. Let's go to Arizona and Barbara. Hello, Barbara.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
I'm just very thankful for your call. Very, very lucky for me to talk to you. Anyway, this happened several years ago. I was in my house here in Phoenix, Arizona, mm-hmm. and my husband and I were, it was close to Halloween, and we were watching TV, and it was actually close to midnight. I think it might have been October 5th or something, but I'm not sure. But we were watching a show called Most Haunted. It was an English show with a girl named Yvette, and they were supposedly doing a live show in London, ghost hunting. And they were having like a seance. They were supposed to be getting in touch with Jack the Ripper at one point, and then they were doing a Ouija board. And we had all the lights in the house out. We thought it was kind of amusing, and we were kind of enjoying it. So while we were watching the show, I had to go to the bathroom. So my husband was in bed, which is actually an important point. I got up, and I went down the hall, which is like you go a short hall, and then you make a right. Mm-hmm. So I was like two halls away. And I shut the door, and I heard from the back of the hall that I was next to, in the back of that hall is a guest bedroom. I heard footsteps coming down the hall from that room.
Mm.
And they were very slow, heavy, plodding steps.
Mm.
And the whole house was dark. I didn't bother to turn on any lights. And I thought, you know, why is Robert getting up? And I thought, what, is he going to go feed the cat? Because it was going towards the kitchen. But in my heart, I knew that that was not my husband. I just was aware that, subconsciously, that those were not his walking.
Right.
The steps got closer to me. They were very slow. They sounded just like Frankenstein. Seriously. And then they went into the kitchen and stopped. And I thought, if I open this door and it's all black out there, like I'm just going to die. I opened up the door. It was all black out there.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And, you know, I obviously lived. I don't know what that was. I went back down the hall. My husband's lying in bed staring at me. And I looked at him and I said, I thought I heard you walk down the hall. And he looked at me and he goes, I thought I heard you walk down the hall. But you were supposed to be in the restroom. And then I saw the light come on when you opened the door again. So well, we both heard it from different parts of the house.
Right. I got you. Let me tell you what I think. And it's just what I think. It's not what I know. You were watching, you said, a seance on television. You were watching somebody manipulate a Ouija board on TV. And this is just a wag, but listen. These things invite things to you. And it may well be that even on television, it does not matter. If you're watching this kind of material, or I might add, listening to a program like the one you're listening to right now, that discussion of these things invites things to you that you might not want. Just a word of warning. But even through the TV, Ouija boards, seances, no. Not good. Maybe okay tonight, but otherwise not good. All right, where to go here? To Indiana and Phil. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Art. It's great to hear you on frequencies other than 80 meters.
Well, thank you.
And I want to give a shout-out to the Bell Gab people who I'm very loosely affiliated with them, thank God. My story is about a friend of mine from the 80s, back when I lived in Illinois. And we'd more or less lost touch with one another, as people do when they get older. And
right.
I moved to this really painfully small town called Allerton, which was literally out in the middle of nowhere. And it's a fairly short story. I was laying in bed, sleeping, minding my own business, and out of dead sleep, and I don't like to get up in the mornings, so this had to be something for me. Somebody's tugging on my foot, and I thought, oh, what's this? And it was my friend David saying goodbye. And you know, when this happened, I just kind of wrote it off as, you know, pizza from the night before, but I was curious. So I, you know, got up and got ready to go to work, turn on the radio, and there's the news story that my friend David had died in a car accident about 3 miles south of where I was.
Good Lord.
Yeah, and it hit me pretty hard.
And he had been tugging on your foot, waking you up to say goodbye.
That's right. And we were pretty, very close. And I hate to bandy the word spiritual sense out there, but we weren't typical, you know, high school kids.
Yeah.
So it actually figured that he would do that, if you know what I mean.
It does. That's one hell of a story, buddy. I don't know what to tell you, but, you know, if it had happened to me, I guess, first there would be horrible shock, and then, I don't know, I guess you'd be at peace with it because you realized your friend did say goodbye to you, but that's rough stuff. That really is rough stuff. I wonder how many get the opportunity, you know, to say goodbye to anybody. Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. To North Carolina and Ron. Hi, Ron.
Hello, Art. Roswell to you.
And
I wanted to just give you a brief start on what happened to me. I have a best friend, and we've known each other for 30 years, and we fish a lot, and it's night fishing. And, of course, as both we were school teachers, so that meant not much day fishing. So we do a lot of night fishing, especially in the summertime. And that's how I got started listening to you each night. And I probably had the first CC Radio Plus, and I also have the Versa Quarter and all of this because I would have to get up early in the morning to go teach school. And so I would have your program to record every night.
I see.
Well, and so Wallace, who is my best friend, and I would go out fishing night on the weekends, and we were having to go through at that time, I think WBT in Charlotte was one of your stations
right
back then. And we would just get out there, and, of course, we would hear most of it. The boat would turn some way, and then a way that we would lose a little bit of the signal.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just because it was coming in. Charlotte was coming in on skip, and you know how skip goes in and out.
I do. Comes and goes.
Here you do. I'm a KA4FUG for 25 years, so we know about skip. Well, so we were fishing, and it was late at night, and I was listening to you, and he was listening to you as we fished, and you had just gotten through the section where you would give the world news and talk about, you know, maybe the first 15 minutes on the world news, and
right,
and
yes.
And I didn't know what your next topic was going to be because we'd catch a fish, and that would go over top of your topic, and then so on. So we moved up this lake, and we moved up to a point where there was a creek running in, and it was running into the main body of water, and we were almost to the headwaters of the lake. And as we sat on this point, and normally that's a great place to catch fish because you've got the creek coming in with fresher water, cooler water, and running into the main body of the water. Well, I was just looking around and listening to you and looking around and fishing and looked up toward the headwaters, and I saw this, what I would describe as a night light, a street light, and it was sort of pinkish, and I thought, well, who would be? This lake is so remote, Art, that there are no houses on the lake. There were, you know, there's nothing there. There's one boat launch, and you have to drive a 5-mile dirt road to get to it.
Right. So what did it turn out to be?
Well, this light moved, and the next time I looked at it, it was bigger. And then the next time I looked at it was bigger, and it started coming through the trees. And And the weirdest thing, Art, as it would come through the trees, if you were to take a flashlight and walk through the trees with a flashlight, every time you went behind a tree, you wouldn't see the light. But yet this was coming through the trees, this whole forest of trees, and you could continuously see the light. And it was a ball that started out no bigger than if you were looking three-quarters of a mile away at a street light. And it got to be, as it approached us, as large as a good-sized pumpkin. And by this time, we were getting scared, I'll be honest with you. And so we turned off all our lights on the boat so as not to attract anything. And all of a sudden, this thing came, and it came out right out to the point. And the point, this was clear on the end. There were no trees where the point ran to the water. And it came right on off and went into the water, and that was the last we saw of it. It didn't.
Ooh, that's weird.
Somebody turned it off, Art.
That is really weird. I have no clue. That's a cross between a ghost story and a UFO story. I have no idea what that would be. Something that would grow or very small light, bigger, basketball size, and then into the water in front of you. Pretty weird stuff. Let's go to Ohio, I believe, and Debbie. Maybe not. Hold on.
How about Scott in Maryland?
Yeah, Scott in Maryland is where we are. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Art. Happy Halloween and many happy Roswells from my wife, Jessica, and her mother, Nadine, who have been fans of yours for decades.
That's the way to get those plugs in.
I met my one and only ghost in 1978 in a lighthouse in Long Island Sound. I was in the Navy. I was 20 years old. I was in submarine school in Groton, Connecticut. And through reasons that I don't remember, I came to make a friend who was in the Coast Guard and was one of the lighthouse keepers of the New London Ledge Lighthouse, which is in Long Island Sound between the North Shore of Long Island and the Connecticut coastline.
Yes.
And at one point he said, hey, how about you come on out to the lighthouse for some weekend? And I said, sure, that sounds great. So I got together with a buddy and we picked up a bunch of groceries and we went across the river from Groton, where sub school is, to New London. And he picked us up in the Zodiac and took us out to the lighthouse and showed us all around, and it was great. And we're having a good time out of the lighthouse, and it's a Saturday night. And there's four of us who are watching TV there. It's the two Coast Guardsmen who are on duty and myself and my friend from sub school. And we're watching Saturday Night Live, and we hear this big thumping, bumping noise from upstairs, really, really loud. And so we go upstairs to see what it is. And we don't really see much except a bunch of free weights, like for weightlifting, you know, the big round heavy ones.
Oh, yes.
They're scattered all over the floor of this room at the lighthouse that they used as an exercise room.
So that had been the noise.
That had been the noise. And my friend Jerry then says, well, yeah, there's a ghost out here. And he tells us the story of the ghost of the lighthouse. And apparently it dates back to the 1930s when civilians were lighthouse keepers. And the way the story went, according to Jerry, was that a husband and wife had been taking care of the lighthouse, and she had been fooling around on him, and he found out about it. And when he found out about it, he threw himself off the top of the lighthouse and killed himself.
Wow. Wow.
So, okay, we thought, all right, that's pretty interesting, and we went back downstairs to watch TV. There was a TV room. So it's a short time later, and all four of us are again watching TV. And we again hear this, you know, loud thumping, you know, noise from upstairs. Well, this time we ran upstairs. We wanted to see what the heck was going on. And we get to the exercise room, and this was the strangest thing. All of the free weights that had been scattered around the floor were stacked up in the middle of the room with the biggest ones on the bottom and then going all the way up with to the smallest ones on the top. And they were stacked up there in the neatest stack you could imagine for free.
And so from the time you heard the noise, you ran up. It could not possibly have happened that quickly.
Well, no, and plus, all four of us were together, so it's not like somebody was trying to pull a fast one.
And then
we were all kind of freaked out at the time. I was 20 at the time. And then the next day, my friend Jerry took us down to the basement of the lighthouse, and he dragged out all these old logs, all the log books from the lighthouse, from when the Coast Guard kept it and from when civilians kept it. And if you go through page after page, and over the years, there were many, many entries of people writing down entries where ghostly things had happened. And some of them were just like standard ghostly stuff, like, you know, doors slamming and creaking noises and stuff. But the really cool ones were like entire floors would be painted or brass would be polished or stuff like that. And it was almost like this guy, this dead lighthouse keeper who threw himself off the top of the lighthouse, was haunting it and was trying to keep the place up to, you know, kind of like, you know, keep up his old duties. So
that sounds that's exactly right. And that is what occurred. And obviously it was haunted. There are haunted places, right? And isn't it interesting that he had books, logs of prior hauntings? That would be eerie, wouldn't it? Really eerie to sit down after that had happened to you and begin reading of the years of hauntings. Wild stuff. All right, Kansas Springs Joe. Hi.
Hold on.
Hello? Going once.
Can you hear me?
I hear you.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi there.
Well, hi there.
Wow, it went a little while. It's pretty cool to hear from you, Hartbell.
Oh, it's cool to hear from you, sir. Do you have a story?
Oh, I have a pretty good story. It's two stories in one, I would say. Basically, back in 2001, my father passed away. He was a big fan of yours, actually.
I'm sorry.
He's
on two levels for you, and since he was a fan for me.
Yes. We trust me, you're probably gaining fans at this point. He passed away. I was probably 19 years old at the time. It was in March. It was. I come home from 2 years of playing college football, and Christmas break, you know, semester change, I switched colleges and came out to a local college. Anyways, I came home and he passed away in March when I, you know, and then a couple months later, I failed out of school. I mean, it wasn't good for me or my mom, but my older brother was I guess you'd call him an overachiever. He was a high school valedictorian, perfect SAT, 1600.
Yeah, I had a sister like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, your story?
Well, the story is that 10 years later, almost 10 years later, after that, after the death of my father, I come home and I'm married. I have a, you know, 1-year-old kid. And then 2 years after that, I get a divorce. Don't want to get
sorry
into that.
Sorry for all that, sir, but your
well,
story.
Of course. What happens is I'm sitting there one night with my mother, and she's telling me this story. She says, I'm sitting in my house. Basically, what happened was a man from down the street said that he had seen my father walk into his house. And then he came down to tell my mom that she needs to look into his shirt pocket for a note. She looks into his shirt pocket for a note. She finds the note. My brother goes to college based on the note.
it takes more than.
He's gone. Well, there is a lesson in it for you. You have to get to the point, to your point, to your story, before the phones give out. Adam in Canada, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. How's it going?
Fine.
So my story involves a friend of mine.
Yes.
He's got a cabin a few streets down from my place in Western Washington. And there's that my friend's little brother. He's never slept in the room in the cabin. And he's always complained that it was haunted. And nobody believed him because he was the class clown and, you know, always joking around, messing around with the family. So nobody took any notice of him. And
are you talking right into the phone? Because it's kind of hard to understand what you're saying.
Tired of either phone. The family lives in Hawaii, and they have their place in the summer.
Yes.
In Western Washington. And they decided to move here full-time, decided to sell this little cabin, buy a bigger place, and they decided to sell it back to the family they bought it from.
Yes.
And when they offered it back to the original family, their father said, I'm too old to look after it. I'll offer it to my kid. So he called up his son, and his son was like, no, I don't want the cabin. It's haunted. And the son, the father's like, what do you mean? And he goes, oh, there used to be an old man in coveralls pointing at the light switch. So the old man was like, okay, don't worry. I won't tell it to you. I'll tell him no thanks. So he calls back to my friend's dad and goes, sorry, we don't want it. And long story short, my son says the place is haunted. My friend's dad goes, oh, that's funny. My son says the place is haunted too. And he goes, what's wrong? He goes, well, he says that there's an old man pointing at a light switch. He goes, oh, okay, well, I'll ask my son what he says. Sure enough, my friend's little brother says he sees the exact same thing. This is 10 years apart that they're seeing the same ghost.
Well, there's, I guess, pretty good basis for that sort of thing. It is said that ghosts do things repetitively, sometimes again and again and again. Maybe that's some sort of karma that comes upon them, but they're always doing the same thing. Some kind of cycle, some kind of repetitive cycle. Hello there in Canada. Mike, you're on the air.
Oh, well, how are you, Art?
I'm okay, sir.
I'm a little nervous, so please bear with me. Anyway,
I'm
in Nova Scotia, Canada, and we live in a fairly old house. Actually, a very old house, 200 or so years old. I live in a town called Annapolis Royal, and it's actually one of the oldest towns in North America. It's actually the location of the most battles fought in North America and all kinds of things like that. Check it out on Wikipedia if you have a minute, and you'll see what I mean. Anyway, I'll get to the point. Basically, when I was a little kid, probably 8 or so, I got this feeling, you know, kind of 2 in the morning, woke up in the middle of the night, and I saw this, I guess to say it politically correctly, an African-American gentleman standing over my bed. I live, like I said, the house is a very old house. We're the last house on a very old dirt road community of probably 50 people.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I saw this apparition, ran into my parents' room. They kind of just dismissed it as, a bad dream, and I went to send me back to bed. And anyway, years later, I had asked around about it, of course, told this story, over the years, and knew some older people in the community. And anyway, I got to talking to them, and they told me a story about how the people who built my house were actually African-American, and they moved here to Canada after the expulsion of the Acadians, if you know your history. Anyway, we're the last house on this road, like I said, far away from the the actual community of Annapolis Royal. So they gave all the black settlers the furthest land from town, of course, you know, like, because they were black, basically, you know, it was
different time.
And, yeah, exactly. So basically how the story went that I heard was that just because of the fact that they were black and, you know, they were doing all right for themselves, some of the white settlers came and hung them, basically, you know, and the house was abandoned for years and people fixed it up over time. And my parents are actually expats. They came up here in the late 70s and, you know, rebuilt this house and, you know, it's a work in progress kind of thing, but hobby farm kind of idea. Anyway, yeah, like I said, we've gotten more verification over the years. We got some information from the deed office that verified their name. Names were actually Ike.
Okay, well, I don't need the name, but it is a...
No, I mean, it was just a very interesting story. But like I said, I've seen this, saw this apparition, and...
Okay, we've got to run, sir. We're way out of time. But you did see an apparition. No question about that. This is Spooky Matter on Halloween. All right. We're way out of time. My favorite story of the night, I've got to say, was the one that never ended and never got to the point. Something I'll remember that forever. All right. As many of you may know, because you've been helping us with it, SiriusXM, which is really a great satellite company, mainly delivering, of course, to vehicles, you know, cars and trucks and so forth, has been having quite a bit of trouble with their streaming partners. In fact, to the degree that it makes listening difficult. Many thousands of my listeners came on board when we began, you know, but they have fallen off because of that reason, a very difficult reason, the 1001 error and many others. It's kind of a systemic problem. We do have a monstrous vehicle audience, of course. However, for a caller-driven show like this one, speaking only to people on cell phones in moving vehicles is, you know, somewhat difficult. The show also is being pirated. Oh, you have no idea. We are all over the net right now. From YouTube, you'll see my show the next day to, you know, to a server in England, for example, that's streaming the show live. All of this going on, all this pirating. And because of all this, I have asked SiriusXM to alter their normal method of doing business and allow free streaming for everybody. Can I say that again? Free streaming for everybody from ArtBell.com. The live show only, of course. All value-added stuff, you know, like on-demand, old shows and so forth, would remain with SiriusXM. Now, they say they may have an answer for this by Monday. That's the announcement that I wanted to make, and that's the current situation. And for those that have helped with the streaming problem, I want to thank you because, you know, we've asked for people to identify the streaming error and then what kind of system you have, what kind of computer and all the rest of it. So we pretty well nailed down the fact that it is a continuing problem. And this would be a wonderful solution. Let me repeat that what we're hoping for is free streaming for everybody. It's a pretty out there hope. But, in fact, we may do it. So, there you have it. I guess I better get to my young lady here. This is Crystal, of course, and she's the one who always leads us out. So lead us out, she will. Again, thank you all very much. Thank you for Spooky Matter, all the spooky stories, even the one that never came to the point. Stars across the sky. And I'm sure, given the opportunity, never would have ended. Good night, all.